Joy, thank you so much indeed for your call. Thank you for all your calls over the course of the programme today, over the last week, and indeed, folks, over the last year. It has been a great pleasure and privilege, as always. Thank you so much for your time this year. Hope to speak to you again next year. Indeed, I hope you join me on Boxing Day, where we have a Boxing Day spectacular for you. And then again in 2026, Monday to Friday from 4. Have a wonderful Christmas and a very, very happy new year. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can stay up to date on everything, including the latest news. Put your news categories in order you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Coming up at 1 on LBC, it's Ian Dale in for Sheila Fogarty. Next, in for James O'Brien, Lewis Goodall.
Christmas supply teacher day, John. Tom, honestly, what could be better? Prince Andrew, they say, was supposed to be settled. The headlines were supposed to have moved on. But, of course, they haven't. Day after day, more documents via the Epstein files. And although Andrew is getting the attention, the question I want to put to you this morning is a slightly different one, which is about the palace itself, the royal family itself. How could they not have known more than perhaps it seemed at the time? And if they did know, when did they know it? Andrew did not operate in isolation. He had protection officers watching him jet off to Epstein's Island. He had private secretaries managing his diary. He had senior royals who may just have heard the whispers. Yet somehow we're supposed to believe that nobody asked questions, that this institution saw nothing, heard nothing, knew nothing.
On your radio, on the LBC app and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, the Trump administration's under fresh pressure to move quicker to release more files into the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Some of the latest documents appear to refer to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and Donald Trump. Both men deny prior knowledge of Epstein's crimes, and appearing in the files doesn't indicate any wrongdoing. David Smith is the Washington bureau chief for The Guardian and is following the story for LBC.
A lot of this material raises more questions than answers. A lot of it is salacious, full of innuendo. And yesterday, Trump himself was arguing that Bill Clinton and others appear in photographs without much context, and it's not necessarily always fair to them because they've not been accused of any wrongdoing.
President Zelensky has revealed that a draft deal to end the war in Ukraine has been negotiated with the United States. Mr. Zelensky says it's currently being reviewed by Russia, with Moscow's response expected tomorrow. But he says issues around territorial control and the management of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant remain unresolved. Russian officials say two police officers are among three people who've been killed in an explosion in Moscow. Authorities say the pair approached a man acting suspiciously near where a general was killed 2 days ago by a car bomb. The Prime Minister has paid tribute to those serving others during the holidays, including the armed forces and NHS staff. Sir Keir Starmer has also used his Christmas message to say his priority is to help those who are struggling with the cost of living, while the Liberal Democrat leader, Sir Ed Davies, highlighted resilience and international friendship. His message focused on the significance of the Norwegian spruce Christmas tree gifted from Oslo to London.
This tree in Trafalgar Square makes me think about families and friends looking out for one another, right here at home. As a Christian, I think it's a great symbol of the Christmas message of generosity, love and hope, of light in the darkness.
And roads, railways and airports across the UK are expected to be extremely busy today as people travel to Christmas. The RAC says 4.2 million journeys are expected to be made. Drivers are being warned to expect delays on major routes, while rail services on many lines will end earlier than usual. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 12 at 98.77. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather dry with sunny spells across the UK for Christmas Eve, windy across the far south and feeling chilly with a high of just 6 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Well, a very good morning to you, listening to Lewis Goodall in for James O'Brien on this Christmas Eve. And is there anywhere else that you, or indeed I, would rather be? I wouldn't have thought so. And there's lots of news to get through, though, on this Christmas Eve, this very special, this special day, of course, for so many people. But it has been unusually, continues to be, which I think is reflective of 2025 overall. Normally, I've worked in journalism long enough to know that these sort of pre-Christmas days, they can be a little bit fallow. They can be a little bit quiet. It can start to feel as if the whole world is winding down. It has not felt that way this week in a run-up to this Christmas, not least because we have had, and it has been one of the weird bits of punctuation, hasn't it, of 2025, the weird kind of sort of semi-regular release of files from the US House Committee investigating Jeffrey Epstein and his activities. A very rare mark, a very rare element, a very, very rare bright spot of bipartisanship in Washington, D.C. It is not often that you get Democrats and Republicans agreeing on anything. It is even rarer to get the most liberal Democrats and the most conservative of MAGA Republicans agreeing on anything. And yet, via the auspices of that committee, they are all as one that they have wanted these files relating to Jeffrey Epstein and what the Department of Justice, the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands, the gigabyte after gigabyte after gigabyte of documents, of photographs, of everything that is related to this man's prosecution and conviction, and all of those who may or may not have been connected with him and his appalling illegal activities. One of the most prolific sex offenders in human history. And it has now become an article of faith, really, that he was not acting alone and that he may have had others acting with him. And those others, that shadowy cabal of powerful men, it has been accused of many, many people are the most powerful men on the planet. And of course, if not powerful, then certainly with a great, then certainly prestigious. And that accusation, of course, has come, always to this day denied, has been attached to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, previously Prince Andrew. And within these files, day after day, week after week, nothing that is proof positive of anything, nothing that can be considered in itself proof of anything, but continually embarrassing files which connect Epstein and Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and a cachet of other powerful men, including Presidents Bill Clinton and Donald Trump. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, according to the latest documents, appears to ask Jeffrey Epstein's fixer, Ghislaine Maxwell, to arrange meetings with, quote, inappropriate friends, while she sought friendly and discreet and fun girls on his behalf. The latest documents with the Epstein file appear to show. This is the largest release yet of the files concerning the financier and convicted child sex offender, which also, as I say, raise fresh questions for the US President Donald Trump. They include emails in the name of A, exchanging detailed messages with Maxwell that appeared to identify, it is reported, the author as Andrew. These are emails from 2001 and 2002, and they appear to give further insights into the relationship between the former prince and Epstein, which of course has been under a great deal of scrutiny since it emerged over a decade ago in 2011. In October, Mountbatten Windsor said of the claims about the links between himself and Epstein, I vigorously deny the accusations against me. He has not so far responded to requests for comment about the new files. Emails recording that Britain's Metropolitan Police have also contacted the FBI, this is also involved in the files, last month to inquire whether there was any ongoing investigations related to the disgraced former prince's association with Epstein. Reporters still going through the cache of over 11,000 documents. This, of course, continues to be a running sore for the royal family, a royal family which has tried to exorcise, really, Prince Andrew, has tried to remove him. But nonetheless, although he has lost the Dukedom of York, although he has lost his princedom, he remains in the line of succession and he remains inevitably within the family and to some extent reliant on the largesse of the family. We're going to speak now to Dr. Andrew Lowney, royal historian and author of Entitled, The Rise and Fall of the House of York. Dr. Lowney, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Did you learn anything new from these files? What should we take from the latest sort of iteration of documents that appear to be related to Andrew?
Well, this material really backs up what I found in the course of my research. I mean, we're filling in gaps in the narrative, but it's very much what I found, just very sleazy behaviour and the fact that Ghislaine Maxwell was procuring women for him. I think what we now need is a proper investigation into his activities and perhaps even into his tax activities, because I think, you know, though the royal family has distanced themselves from him, he is still, I think, protected, and he does need to now be investigated properly.
Has there ever been, to your knowledge, Dr. Lowney, has there been internal investigations within the institution of the royal family itself, not only about Andrew's activities, but about how it was dealt with when it came to the attention of those within the royal family, not just the principal members of the family itself, but, of course, the many courtiers and people who work for the institution?
No, we don't know that because of the sort of secrecy in which they operate. I mean, it would be a very simple matter to interview, for example, protection officers for his various alibis, particularly on the night that he's supposed to have seen Virginia Giuffre here and abroad. And we've not had that. And we've just, you know, no one has spoken. He, as you say, has continued to deny the allegations, not to cooperate with the police. I mean, what we've seen here again is more evidence of him not cooperating with the victims' lawyers and with law enforcement in America. So it just backs up the story we've got. But I think we've still only got the tip of the iceberg here. There are many more people, as you say, involved. I mean, they've looked at, I think, at least 10 co-conspirators. But we're talking about, I think, probably hundreds of victims and probably dozens of powerful men who've been involved in these networks.
I have to say, Dr. Lowney, I find that extraordinary, what you've just said. I find it extraordinary, although actually maybe I should rephrase it. I am shocked but not surprised by what you've said, in the sense that here we have one of the premier institutions of British society, the British establishment, British politics. It is our head of state. It is the family that is fused with our state. That is what they are. And therefore, they represent this country. And yet we do not know, on a matter of gravity such as this, of such clear public interest, whether there's even been an internal investigation into any of these matters about who knew what when within the institution, whether it's taken place, and if it has taken place, what it found.
No, absolutely. And I mean, the same with the Metropolitan Police. I put in the Freedom of Information request and they would, about the investigations they'd conducted, who they'd interviewed, for example, and they refused to answer it. It's just part of the culture of secrecy in this country. I mean, the fact is that Andrew was protected by the institution, including the former Queen. I mean, when people went to complain about his activities, they were sent away with a flea in their ear. People who complained found their careers were curtailed. And we even had cases where the Queen was showing her public support for Andrew, giving him, for example, honours after each fresh disclosure with Epstein. And the royal family knew about this, and they should have dealt with this problem years ago. The problem is it's now got so big, it's encompassing all of them. And wider questions now are being asked about royal accountability and privilege.
I think that is part of the problem, isn't it, Dr. Lowney? Because I think that this relates to something which has basically been verboten within British politics and within the British media, which is that actually quite a big part of this story does relate to the late Queen, at least with regards to how the royal family itself dealt with Andrew and whether they protected him, because we know obviously that she was, you know, he was famously her favorite son, and she ultimately made the decisions with how, in terms of how he was treated. And it is just something that is not done. It is a taboo to criticize the late Queen, but in truth we should be looking at her record on this, shouldn't we?
Absolutely. And again, you know, the problem is all the records are closed. Hopefully we're now going to see a bit more parliamentary scrutiny. Erskine May didn't allow any parliamentary scrutiny of the royals before. And if we could remove the exemptions they have in the Freedom of Information Act, and if there was a royal register, for example, and the removal of the fact they can protect their wealth by having their will sealed, then there will be a bit more openness. And if they have nothing to hide, they should be not worried about any of this. But the pressure has really come from the public and from social media. The media have actually realised that. But I think the Parliament and the Palace still haven't really got ahead of this story.
I was reflecting to myself this morning, Dr. Lally, you can only really reflect yourself on Christmas Eve, can't you? Because no one else really wants to listen. But nonetheless, I was reflecting that if this had been a political story, i.e. a party political story, let's, for example, imagine a senior member of the government, let's, you know, for the sake of argument, say that the Home Secretary or some such, had been revealed, had been in this situation, it was revealed that they'd had these links with Epstein and so on. I mean, I suppose we do have a sort of rougher parallel with Peter Mandelson. But, you know, if this had happened and we'd had these sort of documents released and so on, there would be questions. I mean, not only would that person have eventually been forced to resign one way or the other, but there would certainly have been questions about what the Prime Minister knew, about what senior colleagues knew, about what civil servants knew. Now, maybe that wouldn't have yielded very much. There would have at least have been questions. What I find remarkable, and I think exactly speaks to your point, about the continued opacity of the royal family and the extent to which there is still such a taboo about criticising senior members of the royal family, that these questions don't even seem to have been put, despite the fact that this issue has been around for years.
Absolutely. I mean, there's still deference and sycophancy. I mean, you're absolutely right. The royal family depend on trust and respect of the public, and they've lost that, I think, because of the behaviour of one individual and their reluctance to really address it. I mean, I think there are two things that we need here. One is a parliamentary investigation into Andrew's time as a trade envoy, which was a taxpayer-funded, basically civil service job. And, you know, getting some of those ambassadors who were aiding his activities in Kazakhstan and Azerbaijan and elsewhere, because this is a story not just about sexual misdemeanors, but about financial corruption at the heart of the royal family, and getting them on oath to explain what they were doing. And I think also we need to have all the files on his time as a trade envoy from 2001 to 2011 made public. Many of them should be public under the Public Records Act anyway, but they've all been closed. And I was told that nothing on Andrew will be released until 2065. I mean, this all smacks
that's good.
A huge cover-up.
2065, right, OK, that is absolutely extraordinary. One final thing. I think that it is... I wonder if you agree with me, Dr. Lander, that, look, this might seem a sort of peripheral point in a way, or an esoteric one, but because obviously we know it is highly unlikely, to the point of impossibility, that he would ever actually become head of state, and in the event that it did happen, there was some catastrophe where he suddenly found himself being king, doubtless Parliament would legislate to remove him. But nonetheless, given everything that continues to take place, given the fact this is a running sore, it's not just an embarrassment, his presence in these files, his apparent presence in these files for the royal family, because of the fact that he is umbilically connected to our head of state, it's an embarrassment for our state, for our government, for our country. Do you find it extraordinary that given that the king clearly believes that he's not fit to be a duke or fit to be a prince, that he remains in the line of succession?
Well, I mean, as you say, it's very unlikely that if that situation arose, that he would actually become king. I mean, he certainly harbored hopes at one point of being regent and that Charles would step down.
Really?
But, yeah, so we do have a two-tier system here, and the royals seem to be above the law. And I do think it's important that, the Metropolitan Police and the National Crime Agency do actually now seriously look at Andrew and indeed HMRC, because I do think there are grounds for charges to be brought against him. We've seen charges being levelled against the son of the Crown Princess of Norway. There was a case against King Juan Carlos of Spain before he abdicated. So, it is going on with other royal families, but we seem to be particularly unique in protecting our institution and letting them get away with basically any way they want to behave.
Just finally, you've written in your book about the rise and the fall of the House of York. Is there a possibility that this story spirals, partly fueled by the opacity of the institution, and one day you or someone else are talking about the rise and fall of the House of Windsor?
Yes, I think this is the most dangerous crisis in their history since at least the abdication and possibly before, because we now have wider questions being asked, as I say, about the royal transparency, questions asked about their housing, how active they are. The abdication, that sort of problem was dealt with. He went into exile and that was it. So I think it's a very dangerous moment. The young really have no interest in the royal family. And it would be very easy now for them to lose more support, and just to see a complete irrelevance.
Dr. Andrew Lowney there, royal historian, author of the excellent and, well, indeed, has become a rather famous book now entitled The Rise and Fall of the House of York. I also want to talk to you about, we know that Andrew was clearly a loutish, unpleasant character, to put it at its mildest. That is well established, and it's hard to imagine what else could emerge from these files that could lessen him in the public image yet further. I suppose it is just about possible to imagine, but it is difficult. I want to have a slightly wider conversation, which is this. What does this tell us about the royal family? I find it stunning. I find it stunning that despite the fact we have had these allegations around for years, that as Andrew Lowney was saying there, we still do not know whether the royal family as an institution has bothered to have an investigation into who knew what, when, and where within the institution itself. And I'm not just talking about the family members. I'm talking about the fact that this is an institution. It has endless numbers of staff, courtiers, flunkies, drivers, security, etc., etc., servants, endless numbers of people who must maybe have had some idea about what was going on. And if they did they raise their concerns? And if they did, what was done about those concerns? And did that, as Dr. Lowney was suggesting going there, go up to and including the late Queen herself? I know it's verboten and taboo to talk about her in any kind of negative way whatsoever. She clearly was an excellent head of state for a long time, and she was dedicated to that job and the country. But it is fair, it's entirely legitimate and fair to ask questions about how the Queen protected Andrew and what she knew about Andrew. And to this day, to my knowledge, not a single member of the royal family has given an interview accounting for their institution's behaviour and what they knew and when at any point, despite the fact they do endless press flunky interviews all the time. I saw an interview being trailed, apparently he did on Radio 4, the King, the other day, and everyone was like asking him about, I don't know, asking about farming or something like that. Why not subject them to the full scrutiny of journalism and public interest? And it never happens because we have an absurdly deferential culture. Isn't it time we started to ask more serious questions about what the royal family as an institution knew about these allegations and when? And what does it tell us about the secrecy of our society that hasn't been done already? 0345 6060973 0345 6060973. This has led, this crisis, to the House of York, but if the House of Windsor doesn't open up, might it lead to therefore as well? The time is 10:21.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
Octopus are an absolute breath of fresh air.
The customer service is really good.
People like yourself and all of your colleagues have done such a wonderful job.
Your customer service was tip-top, you know, I couldn't fault it.
You stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including Well Man, Well Woman, Well Baby and Well Kid. From Boots, Pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
This Christmas Eve, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Yes, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve. There's magic in the air, so get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC with Lewis Goodall. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Time is 10:24. Again, so many questions. It was reported that Andrew made a £12 million settlement to the Giffray family. Someone he said that he'd never even met. We don't know who paid for that. It has been reported that some of it at least may have come from the Queen, the late Queen. And as I said on the show yesterday, people talk about there being private money. I have never heard a satisfactory explanation for the delineation between, when you're talking about the royal family, private money and public money. Because ultimately, a lot of their money comes from privileges that we grant them as a nation, whether it's the Crown Estate, the seabed, whatever happens with the Duchy of Lancaster, the Duchy of Cornwall, etc., etc., etc. You know, stuff, by the way, they do not actually reveal properly exactly all of their accounts. There's so much opacity about their financial affairs. We do not know. We have the monarch's will is basically sealed and never seen by the public. So we don't even know how much money they have, let alone what they spend it on. And we all just are supposed to accept this as if it's normal. And that's where you actually end up with rotten institutions, because no one asks questions of them. And so in that darkness, you end up, guess what, having bad things happen. A few texts here. Michael in Kilburn says, "Hi, Lewis, Oxford University's official bit of rough." Oh, rough. Oh, I do hope this little new nickname sticks. Great to have it back. Of course, the senior royals knew Mountbatten Windsor was cavorting with inappropriate friends. The protection team would surely have reported about their concerns. The Queen would have put measures into place to protect her favourite son from the press and other scrutiny. It's not as if Mr. Mountbatten was ever discreet in his affairs. Well, Michael, again, we have no idea whether that's true or not. We've got no evidence to suggest for it, but we've never had any denials because there's never been any investigations into it, as far as we know, which again is amazing. Think of any other public institution, any other public body, organisation, company, government department, political party, whatever it happens to be, having this level of seniority and this level of negative press attention and this level of seriousness of allegations of sexual nature made against such a senior person. Don't you think there would have been a change in the guard at the management, and there would have been a review, there'd have been an inquiry, and if necessary, criminal charges would have been brought or referrals made to the Metropolitan Police? Whereas according to the royal family, as far as we know, we don't even know whether there's been an internal investigation. As Dr. Lowney said, apparently we're not even going to get the files on Prince Andrew until 2065. And we're all supposed to sit there and doff our caps and go, yeah, that seems fair enough. Yeah, why not? Yeah, of course. I'm sure they know what they're doing, the royals. They've never screwed anything up before, have they? Usually their entire lives. Liam is in Daventry. Liam.
Hiya.
Morning.
Yes.
And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too, yeah.
I need to calm down before I go for my Christmas dinner tomorrow.
For a very long time, when I was younger, I was actually quite a staunch monarchist. I was, like, all in favour of it. You
know? So was I.
Enjoyed the history of it, and enjoyed the traditions of it. But now, like, I'm 30 years old, I've kind of just had enough of it, really. I mean, it's not just about Epstein and what's happened with Andrew. It's everything, you know. You can go back with Charles and Diana, and they'll cheesing on each other and playing happy families in front of the cameras. You had Harry and Meghan throwing the toys out the pram, and they'll gaslight the public about what they said and what they didn't say.
So boring, isn't it? So boring.
Andrew, Fergie, you had Prince Charles accepting bags of cash from the Victoria Royals. You keep going on and on and on.
And just a bunch. I've probably already said what I think, but you know what? It's Christmas Eve, so I'm just going to go for it, Liam. You know, too many of them are just a bunch of privileged thickos who have had the most ridiculous gilded prison life and who are so used to never having to account for themselves that basically, yeah, they think they can do what they want. That's the truth.
Agreeing. So, I mean, I look at Prince Andrew and I see him on TV and interviews, and I just think, how does someone like you get in your position? He just comes across as generally a thick individual, just doesn't seem intelligent in the slightest.
And what's sick about it as well is that, you know, we know, I was saying this on the show, I think it was on Monday or Tuesday, I can't remember, but anyway, you know, did Epstein like Andrew? Was Andrew particularly enlightening company around the dinner table? No, of course he wasn't. He's just thick. He's thick and he's got nothing to say, and he's entitled, and he has a completely overinflated sense of his own intellect and his own person. The only reason he was there is because he had Prince in front of his name, and his surname was Windsor. And he was trading off these titles that we, the British state, confer upon him. And in that sense, basically, Epstein was using him, and therefore was using us, to achieve his nefarious, grubby, sordid little ends. That's what I find sick about it.
100%. I mean, I'll say one more thing, really. It probably upset a few people, but Queen Elizabeth, I don't think she gets a free pass. I don't think she was as amazing as people made her out to be. I mean, she just sort of presided over the top of all, on top of all of it, really. She held it, she held it together, but what she really did was freeze it all in place and make it immune from a fall, any accountability or consequence.
Well, and also what happened is because she was so popular, and look, I mean, look, she clearly cared about what she was doing. She took her duty very, very seriously. She did it for a very long time to the very end. One has to respect that. But at the same time, as you say, in a way, that popularity kind of bred a complacency because it meant that the institution was just immune to even, towards the end, to even the slightest reform because there didn't seem to be a need to because she was this almost imperial figure. And it just meant that any questions that might be put could not possibly be put because if you were to put a question to her or about her activity, or even to some extent the wider institution, it was an insult to her and therefore insulting to the wider nation.
Yeah.
Liam in Daventry, grateful to you. Sorry for, I'm on one this morning. Honestly, I need to calm down a little bit before Christmas. I really do. This is not going to be good stuff around the Norwegian dinner table where I'm going later on today. We'll continue this conversation about Andrew. And it's not really about Andrew. I am a bit angry about this. I find it, when I actually sit and think about it, I think it reveals so much of what is wrong with Britain, British politics, and the culture of deference that we have. The just doffing of the cap and the deference and all of that sort of stuff, and not asking serious questions about the so serious matters. We say constantly that we're taking violence against women and girls seriously. We've got a government, indeed, which is putting that, I think rightly, as one of its five central missions. But we've still got a man accused of these things. He continues to deny them, but nonetheless, he did settle with Virginia Giuffre, and we've got all of these references. And no doubt, he had a very close relationship with one of the most prolific sex offenders on Earth. He's still in the line of succession, and everyone thinks that's okay. And even worse than that, the royal family itself answers no questions about any of it, and instead does puffer piece interviews about gardening and organic farming and about how beautiful buildings are in certain royal-sponsored towns. I've had enough of it. It's pathetic. It's pathetic. Answer proper questions. Subject yourself to proper, proper inquiry and investigative scrutiny. If you want public money, if you want to have this gilded position at the top of British society, you want to be in that gilded cage, then start answering questions to deserve it. It's 10:31. Let's get the latest RBC News headlines with Dominic Ellis.
President Zelensky has revealed the details of a draft deal to end the war in Ukraine, which is now being reviewed by Russia. The document, which was negotiated with the United States, includes security guarantees from NATO and its allies. The Trump administration is coming under fresh pressure to speed up the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files. Senior Democrats claim the material so far has been staggered because it reflects badly on the president. And Keir Starmer has renewed his promise to help people struggling with the cost of living in his Christmas message. The Prime Minister's also paid tribute to those serving others during the festive holiday. LBC weather dry with sunny spells across the UK for Christmas Eve, windy across the far south. Feeling chilly, a high of 6 degrees.
This is LBC.
Mate, did you know you could win £100 worth of points when you scan your BP Me Rewards card?
Yes.
And that can be spent on M&S or Amazon vouchers?
Yes.
Oh, what would I get? Oh, new shoes for Mason, socks for Dad, a scarf for Mum, bottle of red for
scan
me.
Your BP Me Rewards card with every purchase of BP and you could win £100 worth of points every hour. So, don't just scan, scan to win.
What would you get?
Fuel and earplugs.
Offer ends 2nd of January 2026. Participating stores only. T's and C's apply. For details, see bpmerewards.co.uk.
Same.
Ho, ho, ho!
Same.
3, 2, 1, hey!
Same.
Whoa, thanks.
Same.
What does Santa call his dog?
Same. Same.
One word. Three syllables.
Same. Same.
Sorry, it's a bit dry.
New plates.
Ooh.
Treat your table to something different this Christmas. Visit your local IKEA now. IKEA, the wonderful everyday.
Look, I've never told you this, but I've always looked up to you. In fact, I used to copy your style. You've always been the cool one. Not that I'd ever actually admit that to you. So this is my way of saying, I know you'd pick something way better than me.
Gift cards are available in-store until the 24th of December and online, even on Christmas Day, because sometimes the best gift is letting them choose. This Christmas, if you can't find the words, find the gift. John Lewis.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Lewis Goodall on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Time is 10:34. We're going to be returning to our Royal Family Appreciation Hour in the next couple of minutes. But first, extraordinary story this. A British national in Australia has had his visa cancelled and faces deportation for allegedly displaying Nazi symbols. Joseph Draper is LBC reporter, of course. Joseph, what's going on here?
Well, Australia, of course, long known, isn't it, for its more muscular approach, shall we say, to migration. Certainly they're not shy about deporting people they see as undesirable. Particularly recently, they've strengthened their laws as well on the use of Nazi symbols, of course, seeing a rise in right-wing and anti-Semitism, extremism over the last few years. They've now arrested a 43-year-old British man just over a week, of course, after that dreadful terror attack on Bondi Beach during a Hanukkah celebration. Now, this British man was living in Brisbane in Queensland. Police say they've been investigating him since October when he allegedly posted a Nazi swastika on social media and called for violence against Jewish people. Officers then searched his home. They found an array of weapons, axes, knives, even swords with swastika symbols. And he's now being detained in an immigration centre. Already, government ministers have stripped him of his visa. He's highly likely to be deported. Last month, a South African national had his visa stripped over similar allegations, really, after attending a neo-Nazi rally in New South Wales. Authorities are thought to be considering delaying deporting this British man until he faces court next month. He can also leave, though, voluntarily before that point to return to the UK. Certainly, the political reaction has already been strong. The Home Affairs Minister, Tony Burke, saying if he came here to hate, he doesn't get to stay. And as I say, Lewis, it's all part of moves, really, to toughen the government's stance against hate speech, particularly right-wing hate speech. The government says in a push to promote social cohesion. One of those proposed changes would be to increase the government minister's powers to cancel visas, so we could see more cases like this in the future.
Well, it's an interesting thing, Joseph, isn't it? Because anybody who is unfortunate enough to be on the Elon Musk hate site X will know that this sort of stuff has become, I wouldn't say completely commonplace, but it's not become unusual in the UK. So if we were to have mirror that sort of policy here, then I think we'd probably have a few deportations ourselves.
Absolutely. And in this particular case, he's alleged to have posted much of that content on X. I believe his account was shut down, but I think he managed to open up another account after that as well. So certainly X is involved in this case.
Joseph Draper there, LBC reporter. I think the ongoing battle around, so-called freedom of speech issues, I'm not so particularly convinced that actually the ability to show swastikas on your account and sort of promote Nazi ideology is a particular element of freedom of speech that I want to necessarily die in a ditch for. But hey, there are weirdos out there who probably would. John is in Reading, who has something to say about Prince Andrew, or formerly Prince Andrew, or whatever the hell we want to call him, John.
Speaking of weirdos, let's talk about Prince Andrew.
Yes, exactly. It's lovely to have the congruence, isn't it? I like to try and theme everything. Go on, John.
I'll start with a question you can find out for me. Does the royal family have to do a DBS check when they're around children?
I have no idea. I suspect...
No, so, because that's the point I was on to bring across. So imagine if I have a child and I know a royal family member with links to...
I don't think he'd pass it, would he?
Yeah. So if they have to, they open up a children's nursery, would I feel comfortable being around a royal family member? No. I'd pull my child out.
Well, any royal family member?
Yes. Because they can't prove in any way that they're linked to this now. Because the email that was, I read the email, because I thought this is interesting. I will read a bit. What got released about Barrymore, and it says very clear that he potentially, allegedly, that children of underage were brought to Balmoral. That is an allegation that they need.
I was going to say, it's an allegation. So these things are allegations, so we have to be careful about these things. But certainly true to say, isn't it? It's certainly true to say that, as we've been saying, there are lots of just basic questions about what the royal family as an institution knew and when about these allegations. Obviously, we're talking about over a decade, you know, back to this from 2011 and so on. And actually, before that, you know, his relationship with Epstein goes back all the way to 2001. So, you know, we're talking basically about this entire century. And it seems very, very hard to believe, that there weren't members of senior members of the family, or certainly officials, courtiers, civil servants, you know, whatever it happens to be, who must have had some idea about it, and we don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's leading me, I can't believe I'm getting to this stage, it's leading me to want to have a referendum on the royal family. Because
I'm very interested in this, John. I have to say, I'm very, very interested in this, because I do think, I mean, you know, we were hearing from the call a couple of minutes ago. I mean, the funny thing is, you know, sometimes people call me, you know, Republican comrade, all this sort of stuff. Actually, you know, for a lot of my life, I would probably describe myself as a monarchist. I would always probably have said to have a sort of slimmed down monarchy by comparison, you know, get rid of all of the sort of hangers on and half the dukes and whatever. I'm not sure why we need a Duke of Marlborough at this point, or Prince Richard or whatever. But, you know, I would have said the kind of principle of and the stability of the monarchy itself was not a bad thing, and so many people seem to get something out of it, so why abolish it? But I have to say, I think it's not so much about the principle of constitutional monarchy at this point, but about the way we do constitutional monarchy that I've got a real problem with, which I think is epitomised in this case. And if I'm honest, I don't think we'll do it any other way, because I think it's an institution, and this is a country which is so resistant to actual sunlight and transparency and reform.
Yep, I totally agree with you, mate. Absolutely, 100%. I think it needs to be addressed. It needs to be looked at. I think Parliament should be required, should be allowed to acquire all paperwork regarding the royal family.
Yeah, but that's the thing. But what I find amazing, this is the other thing, what I find amazing is the complete supine nature of this Parliament. I can't believe that not more parliamentarians are getting up and saying, no, whatever the royal family say, we're changing the line of succession. In this country, we've got a parliamentary monarchy. We decide who's in the line of succession. And if you don't believe that, then you can ask James II or you can ask Edward VIII, because we're the ones who decide to change and decide who is king or who is queen and who is in the line to succession to be the monarch. So we'll decide and we'll get rid of him ourselves. But honestly, I've asked government ministers on my Sunday show about this, and I'm always incredulous. They just go, this is a matter for the royal family. No, it's not a matter for the royal family. You're the government of the day, and we've got these accusations being made about this guy who, until relatively recently, had a government job. He was a trade envoy, and it's not a matter for the government. I find it extraordinary.
So I think it's even more illogical than that. Can you imagine any sort of scenario where an organisation has links to child sex offence, alleged child sex offence? You'd have every single minister going left, right and centre saying, we're going to get in there, we're going to have
Absolutely.
The police in.
Absolutely.
And then what's happened? They said, we'll let them have a private investigation.
Yep.
Are you taking the mic?
Exactly. Frankly, it makes us look like we don't take paedophilia and child sex trafficking very seriously. That's what it makes it look like. It makes it look like it's something that we'll let the royal family get its own house in order on. And I find it absolutely amazing. By the way, just to say that we've actually looked up, members of the royal family themselves do not get standard DBS checks because they aren't employees in that sense, and the sovereign, king, queen hold immunity. However, staff working for them do undergo strict vetting, sometimes more intense than DBS. So there you go. Once again, they have an exemption.
Madness.
All right, John. Grateful to you. Michael is in Kilburn. Michael.
Hi, Lewis. I was hoping your blood pressure would return to normal by now.
I don't know if I'm going to get into the third hour, to be honest, the way we're going. I think I'm going to have to cut down on the old Christmas dinner, or certainly the Christmas brandy.
Yeah, or maybe get some more in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's entirely warranted because it's quite clear that the Queen's tentacles would have extended far and wide. There would have been concerns raised by all those courtiers and flunkies, and they would have come back because she was very, very good at protecting the firm. And, you know, she had two examples of really bad decision-making with her PR, which was Diana and her favourite son. You know, as soon as he lied to the amazing Emily Maitlis, they could have shut him down and exiled him then. I mean, the whole trade envoy thing was probably just fling him around the world as far as possible. But her ear was always open for any scandals or anything that could rebound badly on the family. So it's inconceivable that they wouldn't have known.
Well, indeed. And even if in some world, I find it hard to believe that senior members of the royal family would not have been aware of some of these predilections, let's put it that way, or some of these allegations, at least. at the very least, surely it is reasonable to ask whether they did know, and if so, what they knew and when. And yet, we don't know any of that stuff. We don't know any of that stuff at all.
Well, we have spyness, as you said. Parliament should just ask these questions. The police should be involved, but that deference and that doff-capping still remains in place. I don't understand why. I mean, the Queen's been gone for 3 years now. Her name will never be sullied, really, in the minds of the public, because she's been in our lives, all our lives. So why not just, you know, if this whole Mountbatten-Windsor business doesn't go away, then it will just stain their name forever when they could just... It's already at its lowest ebb right now. Why not just investigate it fully and then...
To be absolutely clear... The family has not said, the royal family has not admitted publicly that they were aware of any specific evidence that Prince Andrew knew about Epstein's sex trafficking activities. They have not admitted or said that they had any direct knowledge of any of the accuser's allegations before they became public through media and legal channels. And I find it extraordinary. So much of the coverage of this story is always about what this might mean for the royal family's reputation and what it might mean for how is the king going to handle it and what is he going to do about Andrew and all of this, or Leo, the queen at that time, whatever. We're almost skipping a beat here. We're skipping a stage. Surely the question should be, before we make a judgment about how this is going to affect the royal family's reputation as an institution, surely we need to know first exactly how they have handled it internally, privately, if indeed they've done so at all. But those questions are just never even put.
That whole thing about 2065, I mean, they want to kick it into the long grass, but they really, it should be taken out of their hands now. It should be a matter of the law, it should be a matter of Parliament. You know, the Queen was like a xenomorph in terms of her protection of her favourite son.
I tell you what, a lot has been said about the late Queen over the 70 years of her reign, Michael, but I'm willing to bet that no one's ever called her a xenomorph before.
No.
Maybe never again, but who knows, Michael in Kilburn there. I think this is the question I want to focus on. I mean, you can hear this is sort of getting my blood going a little bit, probably a little bit too much. I'm supposed to be taking a flight at 4 o'clock. We'll have to calm down before then. But there is a reason for it. And like I say, I don't really care about the royal family. I understand that a lot of people get something out of it. I find the whole thing, I think, as I get older, I actually think that I get a bit more radical on this. I think the hereditary principle becomes more and more absurd. But what I do care about, but I do understand that some people, a lot of people, love it, and it's a big part of them feeling British, and it's a big part of their culture, and I get that, and I respect that, and actually that's why, up to now, if you'd, you know, put me in a voting booth and said get rid of them or don't get rid of them, I would have thought very long and hard about it, and I might probably have come down on the side of not getting rid of them for those and some other reasons. But I think that this is just a matter, simply now, of politics and of governance and of what it means to live in a democracy. I think the way that we are treating this story and that they are treated and the kid gloves that they get in terms of the special dispensations and license that they get to decide how they treat it, what they say and when, the fact that they never give in any interviews about it, they do not subject themselves to scrutiny, it is as if the 20th century never happened. It's almost as if the 19th century never had happened. It's almost as if the Glorious Revolution had never even happened. This sort of extraordinary level of deference and the extent to which we allow them to basically be judge, jury and executioner of themselves, I think speaks very badly of our politics and our Parliament. Is it time now that Parliament got involved and started to dictate the release of documents and dictate the royal family exactly what they need to say about what they knew and when about this story? Isn't it time that Parliament grew a spine with the royal family? 0345 60 60 973. Listening to Lewis Goodall here on LBC on this very festive Christmas Eve. The time is 10:47.
I'm Tom Swarbrick. Thank you for your calls throughout the year on LBC.
Because our young girls approach these foreign guys.
So it's up to the girls to not approach people who they think might be foreign. What is that girl meant to... No, don't laugh, you despicable man. Why are you blaming a 15-year-old girl? Living as a woman doesn't make you a woman.
I trust people to be an expert in their own gender. If someone has been living as a woman for 15 years...
What does that mean, living as a woman?
I don't really know how I can answer the question again.
It's not about time lag.
Because
it's
you not said about 90 calendar. Days, Mr. Corker. The President on. Said 90 days.
Let me answer the question and don't interrupt me.
I'll choose when I speak. Please carry on.
Then this interview is terminated.
I'll be back in the new year taking your calls on LBC.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Fonterra Electric or any car from our award-winning range.
With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wix kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wix, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
When your favourite celebs strut their stuff. When the underdog rises to the occasion. When you can't believe the judges' scores.
Wow, that was fantastic.
Wish I could pass a dough like that.
Well, for starters, you could pass a dough's bickies.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels. So you can enjoy every twist and turn of your favourite reality show. Search TV licence together.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
With Lidl Plus, there's no need to stress to impress this Christmas. Get 15% off deluxe chilled party food, like golden prawn toasties with ponzu dip, scrumptious paella bites and delicious vegetable dim sum. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, subject to availability. Selected stores, terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV. Ends 31st of the 12th.
Lewis Goodall on LBC. Text 84850.
Time is 10:50, nearly 10:51. If you want, I think, a crisp summation of the arrogance of the royal family with regards to public scrutiny, I do think it comes down quite neatly to what was said to be the Queen, late Queen's mantra about this. Never complain, never explain. Just imagine if a politician said that. Just imagine if a politician, at the end of the day, they are a form of politician. I know that might sound weird, but they are. They exist in the political realm. They're not just a family. They're a political institution. They only exist in the way that they do because they are the head of state. They are the state, to get a bit Louis XIV about it. They are a family fused with the state. And you can't be in that position and say, never complain, never explain. That's basically saying, why don't you just shut up? What's it got to do with you? And this is what really annoys me, is when their sycophants in the media and others turn around and go, what you've got to remember, Lewis, is they're a family. No, they're not just a family. They want to be a family when it comes to scrutiny, and they want to be an institution when it comes to power and privilege. I'm sorry, you don't get to have it both ways. Rosemary's in Bedford. Rosemary.
Hello.
Hello, good morning. Good morning,
well,
and Merry Christmas.
I'm very disappointed because I listen to LBC a lot.
Right.
And I think you're all intelligent, articulate people.
Thank you.
But some of what's descended, what's coming across the airways today, is quite playgroundish and horrible. You shouldn't really call people an idiot if they're not there to answer you back. You know, there are better words in the English language.
Corrupt.
And people listen to you. They do.
Corrupt.
Absolutely.
Corrupt. Corrupt, stupid, foolish. What, I mean, would you not think that Andrew would suit all of those things?
But we don't know.
Well, we do know that he's foolish, don't we? Because he spent a long time in the company.
Yes, I know.
Even when he knew he'd gone to prison, he decided to go to the New York home of a convicted sex offender. Would you say that that was pretty foolish?
Foolish, yes, I would absolutely agree.
Stupid, even.
And misguided.
Stupid. Idiotic.
Well, yes, foolish.
Idiotic?
I just think that at the moment, to have reasoned debate is so rare. We don't get it in Parliament anymore.
I agree.
And on your programme, not yours personally, LBC usually are very articulate and very wide-ranging and use a wide range of our beautiful English language, and it's a pleasure.
What would you say that a synonym for foolish might be, Rosemary? One word could be idiotic, might it
misguided.
Not?
Misguided.
And if
no,
he's so if he's foolish, he's a bit more than misguided, wasn't he? I mean, we've got the allegations in these. I'm sorry, Rosemary. Like the allegations, misguided is putting it a bit softly. I mean, the what is in these latest tranche of documents appears to show Ghislaine Maxwell basically looking for girls for him. That's a bit more than misguided, if that's true, isn't it?
Well, it appears to show.
Well, that has been widely reported and not denied.
I also think that there is a lot more to this story that involves not just Andrew, all sorts of people. And yes. I would have thought that you're a big enough firm with a big enough intelligence to accept that we haven't heard maybe even a tenth of what's going on, even including
Rosemary, I mean, and I would maintain, as I say, that if you accept that he's foolish, then I think by definition you've accepted that he's idiotic, because they're basically mean the same thing, and therefore I think it's fair enough to call him an idiot. But leaving the semantics to one side, my point is this, and this is actually what we've been trying to do on the show today. I've not really been talking about Andrew's conduct as such. Andrew's conduct is plain for all to see and is well established.
Yes.
My point is a wider one, which I think is an important subject for debate and actually seldom comes up in the British media, which is what the royal family have known about this and whether this is actually permanently tarnishing them and what they should do about it, i.e. that they should be more transparent. So would you agree with me that they ought to be more transparent about these matters?
Yes, and that you're lifting my heart, because you're now speaking in a very articulate manner,
well,
and I respect what you're saying. I do.
Good. Well.
Because debate requires two or more people to express their views and maybe have their views changed. But
indeed,
you can't do that just by bandying words.
Well, all right. I appreciate
and
that.
I'm an old lady, so be careful what you say.
I
remember the Queen coming to the throne.
Wow,
and
gosh.
I actually watched it on a television, so I'm not talking, I don't know anything about TikTok. I wish I did. I don't.
Well, it's never
but
too late, Rosemary.
I do enjoy listening to programmes when you involve, let's say, the wider public. But what I don't enjoy is when it starts to descend in what I call baying, like it does sometimes in Parliament. And it's
okay.
Very distressing, because our language is full of the right word for everything and encouraging debate.
Well, I'm glad that a bit of both there for Rosemary. That was the points of view slot here on LBC, and Rosemary was very kindly obliging for it. We're grateful to Rosemary, and I will think of a whole new suite, cornucopia indeed, of bon mot or mot juste to describe the behaviour and delectations of the former prince that is known as Andrew. Let's talk to Robert, who is in East Grinstead. Robert.
Hello, Lewis. Hi. It was you that broke this story about this court super injunction.
That's right, yes.
Among other people. You deserve a knighthood for that.
I don't think I'm getting one after this hour, do you, Robert? I think that's...
no,
I think okay. Andrew might get his dukedom back before that happens.
You're okay. You're fine. I mean, everyone gets a bee in their bonnet over something from time to time. I mean, I was watching that film Sexy Beast and with Ben Kingsley in it. I mean, you know, we don't want to end up like Ben Kingsley in Sexy Beast on certain issues. You know, like, that's a good one to watch. I think the thing is to remember, with the royal family, a friend of mine once pointed out she didn't like the royal family, but for not the most common of reasons, or not the most... She sort of was reminding me that they didn't have any freedoms at birth. They were
yes.
born into it, you know. So in a sense...
I feel sorry for them. Honestly, I do. That's the thing, in a way. I actually think one of the strongest arguments for abolishing the monarchy is that it makes them all so painfully unhappy. I can't imagine what it must be like to grow up knowing that your entire destiny is settled from the moment that you're born. And that's even if you have a proper job. It's even worse if you're the spare, as Harry, you know, in fairness to him, has pretty artfully kind of communicated or described. You know, you're basically in a gilded cage. I know they live in luxury, and I know they're, you know, have all of this sort of stuff, but I think it warps their brains.
I don't think it does that. I think that they will have an ambivalence to it. They will question it at times.
Oh dear.
And distance and
Buckingham away. Palace are just on the line there, just trying to shut that down. Sorry, we didn't hear that bit, Robert. Say it again.
No, don't. The thing is this, I think we should be a bit respectful to Prince Andrew, because, you know, basically, you can break it down to he was photographed next to an escort. Now, he says he didn't know her. You could literally pour through all of our relations with people, and one of us might find someone that we know who's dubious in one way or another, and we'd be shocked. The first thing, we'd be shocked. I think
it's a bit worse than that, isn't it?
Defending them.
I think it's...
Thinking they're innocent.
I think it's a bit worse than that, isn't it, Robert? I mean, if it was just that, then why on earth would he have paid all that money to her? And if it was just that, why would he have lost all of his titles?
I think we are, you know, I'm... No, what he did was he actually... volunteered that money. I believe he also surrendered his titles willingly
to avoid going to court.
I suspect that let's just break this down.
Let's break this down, Robert, to be clear, because I think we've got to be fair in particular to the victims of Epstein here, right? He maintained what we know for sure, and this is beyond dispute. It wasn't that he just was pictured with an escort. He maintained a close personal relationship with Jeffrey Epstein after Epstein's 2008 conviction for soliciting sex from a minor. That's not alleged. That's established.
Yeah, but let's just be clear on this.
He's one of the worst, most prolific sex offenders of our age.
The point is this. It seems like Andrew thought mistakenly thought he was innocent. Now, he made a big mistake on that. But the point is this. If you sort of harass people for going along with someone, presuming that it will be cleared up eventually, you're going to undermine mistrials of, you know, people that champion
Robert.
I'm not trying to defend Jeffrey Epstein. That ship has sailed. I'm just saying we need to take a bit of a break,
Robert,
because we seem to be policing sex, which is strange.
We are not. Policing sex. We're policing someone who is very senior in one of our most prominent public institutions. And I repeat, he maintained a close personal relationship with Jeffrey Epstein after Epstein's conviction in 2008 for soliciting sex from a minor. Now, I don't know about you, but if I had a friend who did that, I might think twice about going to stay with them in New York 2 years later, allowing myself to be photographed with him in Central Park, continuing to associate with him socially, despite Epstein being a convicted sex offender, and then his complete failure 9 years later to show even the slightest bit of insight or remorse when he was later questioned by, and indeed it seemed he lied to my colleague, Emily Maitlis, about it. So, Robert, honestly, we're not just talking about, you know, being slightly unpleasant to a man who's had a bit of a run about luck here. The guy is a buffoon and has showed continued misjudgment time and time and time again, so much so that he decided his own brother to strip him of every title that he's got. So let's not have any of that. Robert and East Grinstead there, who for some reason, has got a bit of a soft spot, it seems, in this case for defending or saying that Prince Andrew appears to be subject to something of a misjudgment or whatever. This isn't about Prince Andrew. This isn't about Prince Andrew. I've said that repeatedly. What we're talking about here is the royal family and how they've handled it. We're going to continue that conversation after the news.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, President Zelensky has revealed the details of a deal to end the war in Ukraine. The document, which was negotiated with the US, includes security guarantees from NATO and its allies. But Mr. Zelensky says a number of issues remain, including around territorial control. The draft is being reviewed by Russia, with Moscow potentially giving its response by the end of today. US officials are coming under fresh pressure to move quicker to release more files into the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Some of the latest documents appear to refer to Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and Donald Trump. Both men deny prior knowledge of Epstein's crimes, and appearing in the files doesn't indicate any wrongdoing. Former federal prosecutor Niamh Ramani has told LBC that public interest in the story is still very strong.
It's just a question of, is another victim going to come forward, right? Obviously, Epstein is dead. People want some sort of criminal justice for the rich and powerful men that abused women with Epstein. People are out for blood. It's a question of whether and when someone will be prosecuted for that.
Royal colleges representing more than 90,000 health officials have joined forces to urge pregnant women to get their flu vaccine. They say mothers and babies are at a higher risk of falling seriously ill from the virus. NHS figures show the number of people in England's hospitals with the flu continues to rise.
Sir Keir Starmer has renewed his promise to help people struggling with the cost of living in his Christmas message. The Prime Minister has urged members of the public to reach out to friends, relatives and neighbours during the festive period.
But at this time of the year, which celebrates love and abundance, loss or hardship can feel even more acute. So call round to a neighbour. Check in on a friend or a relative who you haven't heard from for a while. Reach out. It can make a huge difference. That's what Christmas is about.
Kemi Badenoch has completed her first year as the Conservative leader. In her Christmas message, she says the festive break is about family. And the five-time major winner Brooks Koepka will leave the LIV Golf at the end of the 2025 season. He controversially quit the PGA Tour to join the Saudi-backed series for a reported $100 million contract in 2022. The 35-year-old says he's made the decision to spend more time with his family. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 6 at 98.82. The pound buys $1.35 and a euro 14. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells across the UK for Christmas Eve, windy across the far south with a high of 6 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Time is 11.05. Just on that last point that we were hearing there from Dave, I mean, like, honestly, I have noticed this a little bit. You're starting to see it in the sort of worst recesses of parts of the online right. Although that said, the MAGA right in the US is so obsessed with the Epstein question and the idea of there being a sort of shadowy cabal of powerful figures around the world that they are that generally speaking they exempt themselves from the conspiracy around this. But you're starting to see a little bit of kind of rehabilitation of Andrew, or suggesting that somehow he's been sort of badly treated. We even heard it there, I think, from Dave. What did he say, the language there? Sort of, we're starting to police sex. Yeah, well, we do police sex. We do police sex. We police sex when we're talking about rape and when we're talking about child sex trafficking and underage sex. And those are some of the allegations that have been made. Not just allegations with regard to Epstein, completely established fact. And there have been allegations of sexual impropriety about Andrew, which, of course, he continues to deny. But it is undeniable that he settled to the tune of a lot of money, we believe, with Virginia Giuffre and her family. So let's not start getting into this kind of, oh, actually, you know, maybe it was just a kind of just, you know, just a minor thing or whatever it happens to be. The allegations that have been made, at the very least, and again, they continue to be denied, but the allegations are of the most serious nature possible. So let's not get into any of that, trying to kind of dampen down this stuff, because this is what happens with questions about violence against women and girls. You start to get into this awful vortex of a little bit of defence here and saying, oh, is it actually really that bad? Is it just sex? Randy, Andy, naughty man, all of this sort of stuff. No, that is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the most serious allegations. And we know that. Why? Because he is no longer Prince Andrew, and he is no longer the Duke of York, and he's no longer all of those flippant, silly little titles that they get for doing absolutely nothing whatsoever. He's not even apparently at this point allowed to have a gun. So come on. Like, let's be serious. The royal family itself has in effect said that they believe Andrew has done something completely and utterly beyond the pale, because if they didn't think that, they would never have stripped him of his titles. It really is as simple as that. And we're talking now, as I say, and I honestly didn't really want this to be about Andrew, and I'm a bit dispirited that some people are sort of phoning in and suggesting we shouldn't call him certain things or whatever it happens to be. We heard from Rosemary, who sounded like a lovely lady, but did dispute the idea I should call him an idiot and I should find some other words. Well, I mean, take your pick. Rosemary, half-wit, nincompoop, dunce, dolt, ignoramus, cretin, imbecile, dullard, moron, simpleton, clod, dope, ninny, chump or dimwit. You know, whichever one you like best. But honestly, this isn't about Andrew. This is about the institution itself. And I'm just reaffirming it, because I do think this is something that rarely gets discussed, because I do think that the British media on this has such a blind spot. I saw, I think it was in the Telegraph this morning, there was a piece there congratulating the king, praising the king, showing how wise it was, these latest allegations in the Epstein files, saying how sagacious it made him, what a vindication it was for him to have stripped his brother of his titles. That's not the take. That's not the take. The take is, what did the king know about it and when? And does he know something that we don't? Did he know this was coming? And if he did, this latest content in these files, what did he know and when? We don't know, because it's never asked. Everything starts to just move into a kind of dissection of the PR of the House of Windsor and how brilliantly they've handled this, as if we should be congratulating them somehow. And I repeat what I said about 10 minutes ago. This is a family, and the thing that annoys me is you hear this. At the end of the day, people talk about him being exiled. Our understanding, right, is he's still living probably within our distance sort of vision of Sandringham itself. He's still living, basically, at the king and royal family's largesse. And people say, oh, well, they're a family. As I say, they're a family when it suits them. They're a family when it comes to them wanting to say, we shouldn't have scrutiny. But they're an institution when it comes to the power over politics they clearly crave and want, and the power and prestige and the wealth that it gives them. But you can't have both, or you can't have one. You got to have both. It's one and the other together, or neither, in my view. And that's something I think the British media does not understand enough. At the end of the day, what is outrageous about this story is that for years we've been fed carefully worded statements about stepping back from duties and regrettable associations, but never the truth about what the institution itself knew and when. Andrew's friendships with Jeffrey Epstein clearly were not a secret inside those palace walls. The photos, the trips, the private islands, the allegations, they clearly knew about it. They knew about it before the disastrous Newsnight interview with my colleague Emily Maitlis, when Andrew claimed that he couldn't sweat and was too honourable to have sex with teenagers and didn't show a modicum of regret about anything he had ever done ever. And at the end of the day, we also know as a kicker that the royal family, in one way or another, paid Virginia Giuffre millions to make her civil case disappear, because they wanted it to go away quietly, and they didn't want it to go to court, and they didn't want him to go to court, and they didn't want him to be cross-examined. And as a result, apart from that extraordinary Newsnight interview, Andrew has never been subject to a single question, and guess what? Basically, neither has any other member of the royal family itself. And again, I go back to this central proposition. If this were any other institution, anywhere else in British public life, there would rightly be political pressure, parliamentary pressure. There would be pressure on the chief executive to resign. There would be pressure and questions put about who knew what when. We might have a parliamentary inquiry. We might have an internal inquiry. We might even have a judge-led inquiry. But the royal family gets a free pass because they're the royal family, and I don't think that's okay. Mick is in Nottingham. Mick, what do you have to say about this?
I mean, I feel like you and I are probably polar opposites when it comes to opinions of the royal family. But on this, I'm just astounded hearing what everyone's got to say about it.
I tell you what, Mick, I'm grateful that we might have a point of agreement, but we've just got a bit of a problem with the line. So we'll get you back and just clean it up a little bit, shall we? Adam is in Romford. Adam, who has something else to say? Adam.
Hello there.
Hello.
I don't agree with you. I think the royal family are an institution that brings the whole country together. Unfortunately,
not right now.
No, absolutely not in this instance. Unfortunately, and we have to compartmentalise it, unfortunately, in every family, there's always a bad egg. And that bad egg doesn't bring every family down. Neither should this do. The king has done, he's done a good job in trying to sort of bring this to bay. He's done what he can. And he probably has done what can only be expected. The royal family don't sit in the same space as the rest of us. You know,
yes, they do. They're subject to the law, because they are, like everybody else, they're subject to the law and they are a public institution. Are you saying that they are above and over questions of public scrutiny?
I think they are, quite honestly.
Well, that's ridiculous. So they can do whatever they want, and it does, and we just have to go, yeah, well, they're the royal family, get on with it. I mean, honestly, honestly, you are setting yourself up as a sort of almost pre-Magna Carta position with that.
But that is it. That is the past. right, our present and our future. And that's where they're sort of moving from.
Adam, we've spent 1,000 years, in this country, 1,000 years of political victories, basically, trying to make sure that the royal family couldn't do what they wanted, how they wanted, when they wanted it. That's 1,000 years of political evolution. So no, they can't do what they want without question. That is what our parliamentary democracy is all about.
Well, what's the point of having them at all then?
What, so you're saying that, so the logic of what you're saying is that in order to have a royal family, it is necessary for them to be able to do what they want and nobody question them over what they do, even if it involves allegations of being connected to the worst sex offender of all time.
Well, you know, I mean, because that's, you know, somebody's done something wrong. It's not the whole family.
No, I know, I agree. And I've been saying this isn't about...
Trying to take down the whole institution.
No, they're taking themselves down, Adam. They're taking themselves down, and I'll tell you why. Because, fortunately, particularly with newer generations coming through, they don't share the level of doffing-the-cap deference that perhaps dominated in decades gone by. Actually, we've moved into a media environment where questions of transparency are extremely important. The royal family's never complain, never explain is from a different age. You might as well be talking about the wireless in the era of TikTok and Twitter and the rest of it. And they are going to undo themselves, because I'm not talking about Andrew. I think it is beyond dispute, despite the fact we're getting a few people decide to ring in and defend him. It is beyond dispute that Andrew's actions are clearly beyond the pale, and he clearly has something to be ashamed about, because otherwise the king wouldn't have stripped him of all his titles, number one. But my question isn't about Andrew. My question is about how the institution itself has handled this over 20 years. And the idea that they are not subject to public scrutiny, honestly, is medieval.
I mean, there's no way you can scrutinise them. What would
of
you
course
do? Chop
you can.
His head off?
What are you talking? No, what, we're not.
We have a public execution of a family member.
Yeah, all
come
right.
On, don't be ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I'm the ridiculous one here. Adam in Romford, there, grateful to you. Yeah, because that's definitely the binary here. Basically, what we do is we basically allow them to be Louis the 14th and be the Sun King. And allow l'etat-moi and allow them to do whatever they like, whenever they want, divine right of kings. Or we chop their head off. There's definitely no middle ground there, is there? Times 11:15.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes. Or invite everyone round at 2. We said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
With Lidl Plus, there's no need to stress to impress this Christmas. Get 15% off deluxe chilled party food, like golden prawn toasties with ponzu dip, scrumptious paella bites, and delicious vegetable dim sum. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, subject to availability. Selected stores, terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lbtv. Ends 31st of the 12th.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
This Christmas Eve, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Must be won.
Yes, the £50 million Lotto jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve. There's magic in the air, so get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Hey, Harry. Hello, mate. Any tips for the game?
If it's games you want, your best bet is to check out BetVictor's Casino Games. They've got more games than you've had hot dinners. In fact, they've got more games than Las Vegas Gaming Convention's annual convention of games.
Lots of games. Got it.
Yep, there's over 4,000 slot games, including all your favourites like Big Bass Bonanza, live casino tables like roulette and blackjack, and casino games like Crazy Time.
Listen to Harry and make your best bet on BetVictor Casino. 18+ gamblerware.org.
Lewis Goodall on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
Time is 11:17. I fear a few of you have been on the Christmas Baileys a little bit early, to be honest, with some of this stuff. I mean, honestly, I've heard it all now. Apparently, basically, if we ask any questions about what the royal family knew about the former Duke of York, formerly, what was he at some point, second in line to the throne, about his connections with the most prolific sex offender of the 21st century. Apparently, basically, that is tantamount to executing Charles I. I mean, I've heard it all now. It's great to end this on this for Christmas Eve now. This is the sort of final LBC show for me of the year, and I really did not think that we would basically be endorsing the divine right of kings. And yet, here we are. Charles II, Charles I, and James I, for that matter, will be very, very proud. A few of your texts here. Marita says, I wonder if Charles will mention it in his speech. That'd be a rogue choice, wouldn't it, Marita? Oh, that'd be excellent. That'd be very good. You know, just a few things, actually. Something I've been wanting to get off my chest. Channing says, Lewis, if the monarchy does not come clean, they are finished. This means exposing Andrew to the full scrutiny of the law and the whole family's finances to the full scrutiny of the public. They're all woefully out of touch. Ironically, Meghan might have modernised them, but that ship has sailed. They need radical reform or they're done. Josh says, hi, Lewis, long-time listener here, usually on a Sunday. Grateful for that, Josh. I've never agreed with any of your politics, but on this, you're spot on. And I agree with you that it's totally fair to question if and what the late Queen knew and if she covered up for him. Merry Christmas. Josh, I think this is a question beyond politics. I think you could be an arch-conservative. I actually think you... right through to being, you know, really left-wing. And I think it's really not about party politics or whatever this. This is, do you believe in basic democratic governance of our institutions? Right? And at the end of the day, the royal family receive a great deal of public money, but it's not just about the money. It's about their place at the heart of the nation. They can't be the two things at once. Again, I've said that they can't expect to have the scrutiny of a family but the power of an institution, but it's more than that. They also can't expect to be at the heart of the nation, to embody the values of this nation both at home and abroad, which I accept for many people they absolutely do, and also then not expect the scrutiny which comes with holding that high moral, being living on that high moral plane and having that level of responsibility. You just can't. And I accept that might be really difficult to live by day after day and week after week. I think it must be terribly difficult to fuse family and state. And I suspect it makes many of them miserable. But they could walk away from it. They don't have to do it if they don't want to. Again, that battle has been fought before. Ask Edward VIII, who decided that the love of the woman who became his wife was more important than his duties to the state. You could agree with that, you could disagree with it, and you can certainly disagree with some of the associations he had with certain political figures around Europe shortly after that. Hello, Adolf Hitler. But nonetheless, he made that decision, and it was a precedent that was set, and any of them could walk away as well. Mick is in Nottingham. Mick.
How am I being here
now? Speak again, Mick. Say again.
So I think we're both polar opposites when it comes to opinions on my opinion. I'm definitely a royalist, but I'm astounded at the callers that you've had today. There's something in between, you know, flat earthers who, you know, just can't see what's in front of them, or, you know, Nazi party members who watch people get, you know, herded out of ghettos. It's unreal that, you know, I've had close family members who've held the opinion that one of your previous callers had, that basically Andrew was just using an escorting service. But now, surely now, after everything that we've seen now released, the dubious emails and everything, you can't possibly continue to hold that position. I just can't believe there's people bringing up and you know, previously I would have, anything else, I would have said, you know, the monarchy is above it, basically. But child sex offences is just, there's no comparison. Do you know what I mean? It's not small fish. This is a massive, massive issue. And I think it's, you know, the government has a duty to uncover what's happened.
I'm afraid again, the line is not a pleasant one, I'm afraid. You know, maybe it's Buckingham Palace, I don't know, trying to shut you down. Joke, but I think we got the gist of what you were saying. And again, Mick speaks to exactly what I've been saying, which is this, there's no reason this can't unite right to left. And actually, if you're a monarchist, I think the most ardent monarchists, and I can see the arguments for, I can appreciate, maybe I'm sounding like a Republican. I'm actually more ambivalent than probably I'm sounding here. I'm getting more Republican as I get older, I must confess. But I can still see the arguments for a constitutional monarchy. I can see that constitutional monarchy at its best offers offers certain virtues to our politics. I really can. And I can see that individual members of the royal family can and do good things. But I think that if you are the most ardent monarchist, you should be the one shouting from the rooftops that they need to get a grip of this and to reform themselves from within, that this is an opportunity to show. We hear that Charles is a moderniser. I mean, this is an opportunity to show that he is different from his late mother in allowing some of the sunlight in, doing an interview about this, or at least allowing someone to do so, to subject themselves to some scrutiny, to reveal exactly what has been known when, and exactly what the nature was of the payment, where the money has come from to support Andrew, all of these different things. That is why that is so, so important, because if you don't do that, what it leads to is people saying they have something to hide. And although much of the British media still exhibits a remarkable deference to the royal family as an institution, a lot of the public, and particularly younger people, do not share that deference and will fill that vacuum and that void in the end. All they will see, some of them will see, fairly or unfairly, is an institution that has protected for a long time someone with clear connections, and the accusation is, have at the very least lied about the nature of some of those connections, to the most prolific sex offender of our century. And that is just the truth. Whether people like hearing that or not, it is just the truth. And then the question is how the royal family, as a political institution, because that is what it is not just a family, it's a political institution, how they respond. I'm sorry, they get off lightly. Claire is in Hayes. Claire.
Excuse me. Yes, good morning, Lewis.
Good morning.
Well, I never thought we would go prior Magna Carta to the divine right of kings and then ignore the Civil War.
Yes.
But when you've got that kind of serf mentality where people still believe we have to have this ludicrous hierarchy, things will never change. But I wish to point out that Andrew Windsor would have had his royal police protection follow him every single way, place he went. He would. They would have been there in New York. They would have been there when Andrew was walking through Central Park. They would have been everywhere keeping an eye on him, and they would have reported back to the old queen. She knew, and she knew she had to protect him. But when you've got MPs who can't wait to wear a ridiculous plumed hat, a voluminous robe, stocking tights, buckle shoes and a garter, things will never change, and Charles Windsor and the rest of them will be able to extort £1 million from Guy's and St Thomas's, £80,000 for Marie Curie Cancer Care, £80,000 from Comic Relief, and God knows how much from Dartmoor, which I thought was a national park. Things won't change. We need legislation to make them 100% transparent. We need legislation to show what their finances are, what they get. We don't need to protect ourselves from asylum seekers. We need to protect ourselves from William the Conqueror's descendants who own England and extort and extract millions of pounds. Did you know that Charles Windsor was the only royal to ascend the throne who was a billionaire?
Well, it doesn't surprise me.
I mean, it's appalling. Are you watching Dable Dimbleby's
I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard good things about it. I'm looking forward to watching it over Christmas. Yeah.
It is absolutely astonishing. Well, I was put right when I saw Channel 4's documentary. I mean, it was just explosive. And I was infuriated because regularly, without fail, I religiously collect for Comic Relief. Never again, not while it goes to Andrew, to Charles Windsor. I will never buy anything for Marie Curie Cancer Care. Kate Middleton and Charles have got cancer, and they take money from Marie Curie Cancer Care, and they talk about God, they talk about religion, they talk about Christianity. I don't want to see that man in a church, anywhere in a church.
All right, Claire, grateful to you. I'm not entirely sure what that's referring to, so I think we'll leave that there. But it's certainly true to say, as we've been saying, that the royal family can be rather opaque about these things. I mean, just talking about, Claire does raise an interesting point, which is about politicians, the way that the kind of royal family is embedded within our politics and within our democratic politics. And that is true even, you know, when cabinet ministers are appointed, they're typically sworn in as privy councillors, if they aren't already. And that itself is bizarre, right? Because I think it does create this kind of link to the royal family. It's one of those things that I think softens a lot of ministers towards them. So the ceremony itself is genuinely bizarre. It's probably medieval stuff. Ministers kneel before the monarch. They raise their right hand, and then they swear an oath of loyalty to the crown. They then kiss the king's hand, or the late queen's hand as it was. It's not symbolic kneeling. It's supposed to be literal on your knees subservience. The Privy Council oath is supposed to bind them to the secrecy and loyalty to the sovereign they become the Right Honourable for life, and then they get access to privileged and classified information. Technically, they're the monarch's advisers, though in practice, of course, the Privy Council just rubber stamps the decisions. The meetings happen standing up, no chairs are allowed, supposedly so they finish quickly. The King formally approves orders in council, secondary legislation that ministers bring, but it's pure theatre, you obviously can't refuse. The whole rigmarole, in my view, embeds the idea that ministers serve the crown first, the public second. You're literally on your knees pledging loyalty to one unelected person before you can run a government department in what is supposed to be a 21st century democracy. And it's not just the cabinet, opposition leaders do it as well. Jeremy Corbyn had to do it. I'd have liked to have been a fly on that wall. Even the SNP's Westminster leader had to do it, despite the fact they wanted to abolish the monarchy. And like, you can say it's quaint tradition and it's nice, but it's not about it being nice. No one ever sees it. It's about just constantly reaffirming the idea that this is fundamentally an institution of power. It is often said that the House of Windsor has no power. I do not believe that. That is not true. Its constitutional powers may be relatively limited, but it certainly enjoys tremendous influence, which is a form of power. It involves and enjoys tremendous privilege, which is a form of power. The fact that they are receiving so little scrutiny about this issue, about what they did and what they knew and when they knew it, is a privilege. And it is itself, therefore, a form of power. It is literally exemplifying the power they enjoy, because no other public institution would have it. And I think that is completely and utterly unarguable. Unless someone can argue with me and tell me why I'm wrong and why they should enjoy that privilege or power. 0345-6060973, 0345-6060973. And, of course, you can text on 84850. The time is 11:30. Listening to Lewis Goodall, sitting in for James O'Brien here on LBC on this Christmas Eve, with a very Christmassy subject, I suppose. Not at all. Let's get the latest LBC News headlines with Dominic Ellis.
President Zelensky has revealed the details of a draft deal to end the war in Ukraine, which is now being reviewed by Russia. The document, which was negotiated with the US, includes security guarantees from NATO and its allies. Campaigners are putting pressure on the US officials to speed up the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files. The latest tranche contains thousands of documents. And the US State Department says it'll deny visas to five European citizens. The group includes a former EU commissioner who had been accused of pressuring tech firms to censor American viewpoints. LBC weather: dry with sunny spells across the UK for Christmas Eve, windy across the far south, feeling chilly, a high of 6 degrees.
This is LBC.
The Lotto £15 million jackpot must be won tonight.
You heard that right. Lotto's £15 million jackpot must be won.
Must be won?
Exactly. Must be won.
And very exciting news, it could be you.
Me?
Yup, as long as you have a ticket, you're in with a chance.
Well then, I'd best grab a ticket.
Lotto's £15 million jackpot must be won on Christmas Eve, or thousands of you will win a share of the prize. Get your ticket today. Lotto from the National Lottery. It could be you. Prizes rounded down to the nearest pound. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Christmas Eve is finally here, but you're still running around stores looking for that Hawaiian shirt Dad has at the top of his wish list. There's no such thing as the perfect Christmas, but there are perfect moments. This year, make the most of moments that matter with Coca-Cola. Whether you're trying to track down the perfect gift or chatting with your colleagues about this year's Christmas party, refresh your holiday spirit with Coca-Cola, the perfect drink for sharing in the moment. Coca-Cola, holidays are coming.
You know, sometimes you just want to mosey. Travel your own road. Slow things down a mite. Meet the locals and smell the coffee. So friends, take time to sit down with the folks at Little America and let them tailor-make your trip to Canada and the U.S. just the way you like it. For slow travel that nourishes the soul, head to littleamerica.co.uk.
Get the news your way and combine breaking news with expert opinion to see the full picture.
With award-winning journalism on air and in your hand, the LBC app puts you in control.
The biggest stories of the day delivered how you want it
and when you want it.
Download the LBC app Now.
News. Your way.
Now. In your hands.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC. With Lewis Goodall.
Time is 11:33. A few of your texts on this. Siobhan says, Lewis, I'm a Republican, agree with everything you say about the institution of monarchy and the secrecy and corruption around them. But I think it demeans you to attack them individually as a bunch of thickos. Firstly, being thick is not something anyone can help. And it is very unpleasant when people blessed with intelligence such as yours look down on those who are not so fortunate. I don't know, Siobhan. I think all in all, when we're talking about privilege and looking down on people, I reckon the royal family do it a bit more than me, but never mind. Secondly, until we as a nation decide to abolish the monarchy, it's hard to know what else they could do with their lives other than open hospitals and talk about trees and buildings. I mean, look, Siobhan, I hear you. I suppose it sort of slightly brings out, as you might have noticed, though, the class warrior in me, I suppose, but never mind. John says, we can't have meritocracy while vast swathes of land and assets are inherited tax-free by a family whose only qualification is a warped version of post-Roman monarchy. They could at least pay inheritance tax. The fact that they don't makes them a huge net cost to our society. The Epstein scandal is the final straw for me. Karen says, I love the royals, but this story makes me realise they're above the law. That needs to change. Andrew needs to be investigated. And one final one here. Stuart says, we as a nation tend to treat the royal family in the same way we treat the likes of Boris Johnson, etc. We assume these chinless wonders are somehow better than us, when in fact they're just as flawed as us, but with unimaginable wealth and power. We allow them to lord it over us, and we thank them for it. In fairness to Boris Johnson, Stuart, for all of his many flaws, I don't think he certainly had a lot more scrutiny. Sometimes he evaded it through the fact that he was quite a skilled politician, but he had a lot more scrutiny than the royal family do. I mean, like, some of the way that they're talked about, the coverage of them is so fawning. They'll say things like, oh, yes, there we have, I don't know, the Queen Camilla or whoever it happens to be, you know, there she is, sort of, oh, she's got such a way with people, she talks to people, she goes and says hello. Gosh, I know, such extraordinary social skill. If only the rest of us could conjure it. Ray is in Swansea. Ray, good morning.
Good morning, Lewis. I'm a first-time caller, so...
Welcome aboard.
Yeah.
You can have an LBC OBE.
Okay.
I'll start giving those
out. To say, the institution that was the royal family, I think, is had its day, to be honest. I think with the death of the Queen, Queen Elizabeth, it was an end of so much hiding of problems for... I'm born in the 50s, so... I grew up with the royal family, the Queen's speech on the television, et cetera, followed Charles, queued for hours in the day, in the rainy day in the 70s, and we drove past us and where we lived and all the rest of it, you know, as a dutiful child. But I think there's just more to the royal family than meets the eye. There is now so much information on media. If you know where to look, all right, you've got to have to sift through the good and the bad.
Yeah.
But if you want to go down to Andrew without down that route, I can't say what I want to say on the radio, but...
well, I don't know. I think I've said a fair bit, Ray, and I'm getting a bit of flack for it. So, you know, in a way, as long as you keep it below that line. I've got told off by Rosemary, God bless her, for calling him idiotic, which I think, all in all, was probably on the milder side of what I could have said.
It's not what we call him down here.
Let me ask you this, Ray. Do you think that there is a chance? And I was struck by what Andrew Lanny, I don't know if you heard at the very top of the show, the biographer of Andrew, said about this. You know, he's written this book, The Rise and Fall of the House of Windsor, for the House of York. Is there a world where this brings down the House of Windsor as well?
I think it's the time of Windsor is done, to be honest with you. But the problem is, if you get rid of people, say, oh, we love the royal family, they bring money to the country, they do this and that, but they are above the law. You know, it's that simple. Paying off somebody to hide something.
Well, it's the king's justice, isn't it? It's the king's justice. Well, you're tried, it's the crown versus you, so very hard to see how they could try one on their own.
And well, if you and I did it, there's only one place we would end up, you know.
And we should say the Metropolitan Police have looked at it and they've said repeatedly that there's no need to investigate it, or they've looked at it and there's no chance of investigation now. So I suppose we have to go on what they've said, which is that there's obviously insufficient evidence around it, but that is something that Virginia Giuffre's family, at least, certainly have taken issue with.
That's all I can say to people is, look for information in other places. It's all out there. Form your own opinion, but I think the day of the Windsor is gone. It died with the Queen, unfortunately. And I don't think they're going to pull themselves back because it's all coming out in the world.
Ray, grateful to you. And of course, one of the things, as we've been saying, is that, you know, Ray says there, which, you know, I think you can make an interesting argument for, which is that the late Queen, perhaps the, you know, the monarchies, we knew it died with the late Queen, that deference died with the late Queen. I'm not sure if it's totally true. I think the King now enjoys a deference that he certainly didn't enjoy for the 70, however many years it was that he was the Prince of Wales. Far from it. I think that sort of baton of deference, if you can have such a thing, has been passed to him. But at the same time, actually, ironically enough, and again, it's sort of forbidden to say and it's taboo to say, but, you know, actually a lot of the seeds of this were sown during the Queen's time, not least clearly in terms of how Andrew was treated and the special privileges that he was given, but also questions, as I say, about what Queen Elizabeth II knew and what she did about it and how she paid, apparently, reportedly paid for the money to pay off Gaffray's family. James is in Hatfield, in Hertfordshire, of course. James, good morning.
Good morning, Lewis. Can I just say, before I make my main point, many congratulations on the journalistic award that you picked up earlier this year. Well deserved, in my opinion. And I think the reason I'm saying it is because I think this country actually needs more journalists of your calibre to do the digging that us mere mortals who aren't in the media cannot do, because it is only through the work that people like you do that we actually, as the general public, get an insight.
You've been on the Christmas sherry a bit early, haven't you, James? Honestly, you need to put it away.
No, I absolutely haven't. If anything, you can accuse me of redressing the balance, because I've been incredulous listening to some of the paedophile apologists that have been on. As I said to your researcher, what always gets left out of these conversations, and it's not a criticism of your show, LBC, but it's just the way it seems to happen, is at the end of these allegations, and the law of averages says that some of them will turn out to be factually correct, there is a victim whose life will have been destroyed.
Yep.
And they never get the spotlight, and that is something that really needs to be looked at and rebalanced by, you know, the media and people that are involved in sourcing these horrendous situations out. And I'll just end by saying, you know, you've touched on it. These are amongst, well, they're not actually, they're a small proportion of the population, but they are the most protected people in our world, people who have already got immense power and wealth. And as anyone that's lived a life knows, those two factors are the most corrupting things on the planet, power and money. And these people are hemorrhaging it. And yet there seems to be people amongst the general populace that think it's necessary for them to be protected even more. There's no smoke without fire. And yes, sure, there'll be some things that turn out to not be true. But the reason this has taken so long to come to the surface is because the establishment and the royal family have immense power. And I always remember where I started to change on the royal family was a few years ago. You remember Paul Burrell, Diana's former butler?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I always remember, and it was such a telling and chilling moment where he said that the Queen had taken him to one side, the former Queen, and said, be careful what you say, Paul, because there are powerful forces at work, the like of which you know nothing about. And I thought, if that doesn't show you the dark side of what a lot of people think is, oh, this wonderful institution that is part of the fabric of our society. I don't think it is anymore, as your previous caller said, and the eloquent lady that you had on before the news. She's definitely got her finger on the pulse. But I myself am appalled that this situation is as it is. We have a right to know what is going on, what has gone on.
Well, this
institution wants to continue.
And this is the thing, Joe, and I think you're completely right to bring it back to the victims, because we should just, because particularly my sort of instincts journalistically, and I think, you know, inevitably you talk about the politics and you talk about the institution, but we should remind ourselves, not least because we've had a few, I wouldn't say I've seen apologists, but perhaps some who are sort of lessening the idea of what's happened and a potential connection. Epstein ran a systemic operation trafficking and sexually abusing underage girls, some as young as 14, for years. It wasn't opportunistic, it was an organised syndicate basically, recruiting vulnerable girls who he would have sex with and God knows what else. And then he would tell them, and this is one of the most chilling things of all, he would then tell them that if you bring another girl back to me, you don't have to have sex with me again, but I'll pay you, so you'll just get as much. And so it basically created a cascade, exponential growth, like compound interest, basically, of young women being brought and trafficked to him to do goodness knows what with, and then coercing them into all sorts of sexual abuse. And then on top of that, and the point is, sorry to go on about this, but I think this is a key point to your point, which is what makes this particularly sinister is that he is obviously has been connected with for such a long time some of the most powerful people across the planet who arguably in one way or another he traded off their prestige to allow him to get away with what he did for year after year after year. Whether they knew about it or not, he conferred upon them, they conferred upon him prestige and power, which he exploited. And that includes through his friendship with him, Prince Andrew, and therefore the royal family are being umbilically connected with Prince Andrew, have to account for what, if anything, they knew about these activities.
And of course, all of these crimes need enablers. That's what they are. There is a network of perpetrators, but there are also people enabling these perpetrators to be able to carry on what they're doing for years and years and years. We saw this in the Savile inquiry, with some of the Northern police forces, who high-ranking officers who were prepared to keep quiet because Jimmy was a friend. And this is one of the biggest obstacles against bringing all of this stuff to an end, because as long as you've got enablers, it's a green light for the perpetrators.
I mean, James, you just made me think, actually, of, for example, one of the themes, political themes of this year, rightly so, but one of the things that the press, the right-wing press in particular, get very exercised about, again, I think you can say rightly so, there's been a lot of concern about the question of grooming gangs, particularly grooming gangs linked with particular ethnicities. Now, I don't want to go down that particular rabbit hole right now, but the point is that, you know, one of the accusations, an institutional accusation that has been made, and indeed it's well documented now at this point, it's not just an accusation, is that, you know, local authorities and some charities and elements of civil society turn a blind eye to grooming gangs because for institutional reasons around accusations of racism and so on. And there has been a huge clamour, again, I think you can say rightly so, to get an inquiry into those things and to investigate those things and make sure that it never happens again. What we have in the case of Epstein is institutional forces protecting him for a long time and the connection with a very senior member of the royal family, and indeed, potentially, the royal family not being, in fact, it's not just potential, being completely opaque about what they knew and when about this very important matter. And I don't see the same clamour for that sort of transparency and scrutiny that we're seeing for other public bodies, rightly, in other sex scandals.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I'm going to end by wishing you a Merry Christmas and keep up the good work,
James,
because we truly do need more journalistic equality that you've been bringing. So all the best.
Whether he's been on the Christmas sherry or not, I'm grateful to James. James in Hatfield there. Very, very nice way to end the call. And I think absolutely exactly right on the money, which is to talk about the victims. That's what we're talking about here. And ultimately, what we're talking about is whether or not the accusation that is made is this basically Andrew's royal name helped protect Epstein and helped convey a legitimacy on him, which in whatever way, whatever Andrew knew about what was going on, enabled Epstein, was an enabler of Epstein to do what he was doing. Because this was a man who was like a vampire. He's a vampire. He basically traded off and used other people, sucked the power of other people's power and prestige to help enable him to do his activities. And you would think that given that, the royal family might want to be transparent about exactly what was known about Andrew's relationship and what was done if any questions of potential impropriety were put or were asked, but we still don't know. Your thoughts on what we should know from the royal family, 0345 6060 973. The time is 11:47.
I'm Andrew Marr. Thank you for joining me throughout the year on LBC.
You can say to the British people on Budget Day, look, things are really bad, therefore I have to raise income tax. So tomorrow I'm going to resign as Chancellor of the Exchequer, having done the right thing.
And what do you think would happen in financial markets if I did that?
It depends who took over.
President Trump seems to be waking up every morning with a new idea, and be it tariffs or something else. In my personal opinion, I don't think he's thought it through.
What's your verdict so far on how it's going?
Due to despair of the risk-free be all things to all men approach of Keir Starmer, which I think is a fool's errand.
I'll be back in the new year leading Britain's conversation.
New year, new you? Maybe. New year, new car? Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until the January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18+. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
So, close your eyes. Picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 80 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000. And right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
With Lidl Plus, there's no need to stress to impress this Christmas. Get 15% off deluxe chilled party food, like golden prawn toasties with ponzu dip, scrumptious paella bites, and delicious vegetable dim sum. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, subject to availability. Selected stores terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lbtv. Ends 31st of the 12th.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
Music, news, celebrities, socials, entertainment, podcasts, video.
The world of media and entertainment is a world we all turn to every second that we can. And university isn't for everyone. So, if you're leaving school, take a look at joining Global Academy in year 14 to take a unique course in creative enterprise and kickstart your media career. Get industry experience, develop your entrepreneurial skills, and it's free. Apply now at globalacademy.com.
This is LBC with Lewis Goodall.
Time is 11:50. A few more of your texts here. Ollie says, totally agree, Lewis. You're on the money with this. All I want for Christmas is proportional representation. Oh, yeah, that's what every kid wants, isn't it? Oh, what's in that? What's in that present, Daddy? What's in that present? Oh, look. It's a single transferable vote system. Yes. So how you got AMS last year? Some electoral system gags there. It's one for the real tryhards. Get rid of the royal family, says this person, who perhaps entirely unsurprisingly, given the content of their message, has left their name off because they've said, get rid of the royal family, Lewis, and we'll end up with Britain as an Islamic state. No thanks. Well, yeah, that is the binary, isn't it? Yeah, I think that's true, actually. It's true. If we get rid of Charles, that's it. Yep, we'll be inviting ISIS in. We'll be raising the black flag of ISIS over Parliament and Buckingham Palace. Yeah, we'll be performing ritual executions. Yeah, Sharia law. Oh, absolutely. I mean, honestly, it's a well-trodden path. I mean, honestly, when they got rid of Louis the 16th in France back in the 18th century, yeah, I mean, they've basically been an Islamic state ever since, haven't they? Been governed by a load of caliphs. Yeah, brilliant. Simon's in charge in Somerset. Simon.
Hello. How are you doing, Lewis?
Hello, yes. Simon, yeah, what do you think about this? Simon, again, we have a few line problems this morning, so we'll try and get you back on a better line, hopefully. Ollie is in Stockport. Ollie.
Hello, Lewis. You didn't like my proportional representation.
Oh, it's you. Oh, brilliant. So come on, what's your favourite? Oh, let's do some real Christmas content here, Ollie. If you were to get proportional representation in your stocking, which particular PR electoral system would you most desire Santa to lead you?
Oh, single transferable vote, I believe.
Oh, really? Oh, God, the switchboard's already dying. It's dying, Ollie. It's dying. People are hanging up, man.
Aren't I great fun?
Yeah. I tell you what, your Christmas dinner must be a hell of a laugh.
Oh, yeah, I'm telling you. My family will be loving me.
So why do you think, what's PR got to do with this?
The broader point for me, and not to take away from the very important issue that you're talking about, is just the systemic issues that needs to be challenged within the country in order to deal with, and hopefully, from my opinion, from my point of view, get rid of the monarchy. And getting rid of the monarchy is one thing I feel like we need to do as a country. Getting rid of the House of Lords is another thing I feel like we need to do as a country. And bringing in some form of proportional representation. It feels like we need to modernise. It feels like we need to mature. It feels like we need to grow up a bit.
I mean, can you believe, Ollie? I mean, since you mentioned the House of Lords, I mean, can you believe, and I think it is two sides of the same coin, can you believe, I mean, the government is, you know, finally doing something about it, but can you believe that, and again, it links back to the kind of regressiveness, I think, and how retrograde so much of our constitution is, and how, you know, we're constantly doffing our cap. Can you believe that we've still got 92 hereditary peers in our legislature? I mean, it's absolutely mad. We've got 92 tribal elders still sat in our legislature by right of birth. And whenever I tweet about this, I get some absolute, like, dullards who tweet going like, well, better than being elected. What? What? Yeah. What would be better than... We've not won that principle yet, the hereditary principle. We honestly believe that having people in our legislature by right of birth, because their great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather once, like, you know, went hunting with Richard II or whatever it was, and then happened to like the cut of his jib, that actually somehow that is better than having elected members of our House of Lords. It's completely mad.
I mean, it is completely mad. And it is completely mad. I can't get my head around it. I can't understand where people are coming from, where they feel as though that is somehow forming a modern democracy. Like, that's going to make us...
You also got, Ollie, sorry, you said to someone, but since you're setting me off here, it's the electoral reform chat. It just gets me going, you know what I mean? Like, it gets my blood pumping. Yeah. But the
you'll be fun at Christmas too, then, Lou.
Oh, yeah, big time. What's in your Christmas cracker? Anyway, it is one of the things that really is irritating is when people, they roll out the argument, we've heard it sort of adverted to on the show over the last hour or two, is this idea, well, if you let the light in, I mean, what's the point? What's the point? You know, if you let the light in, then you're getting rid of the magic. I'm sorry, right? You know what? If we get rid of the magic, if letting the light in means asking basic questions about what an institution knew about allegations of links between one of the most serious sex offenders of all time and a serious member of that institution, you know what? Let the magic die.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, I was really shocked by some of your earlier callers, to be honest, in regard to their views around kind of turning a blind eye or trying to minimise the damage that has been caused to the victims and, you know, being apologetic for Andrew in some ways. I mean, and your last caller that I thought was brilliant that was talking about enablers. I mean, the royal family have been an enabler of Andrew. They've enabled him to behave in the way that he has.
And protected
him. To get away with it.
And
it's an utter disgrace.
And given,
we should be up in arms about it. I really agree.
And given that they have protected him and insulated him, people say, well, he's part of the family. It's like, yeah, but they're more than the family. Given that they have clearly insulated and protected him over the years and given him financial support and help and all this sort of stuff, that makes the questions about what, if anything, they knew about these links and what Epstein was like all the more acute. And yet, the questions aren't even put.
Yeah. Absolutely agree.
Ollie.
It's a total disgrace. And isn't it shocking that the only person that is in prison currently is a female, rightfully so, when we've got all of these very, very well-known men that are linked to Epstein, very powerful, wealthy men that are all managing to get away with it. And the only person that has been prosecuted,
I think she is pretty...
I think
by all accounts, she was a bit of a monster, Ollie, so I think that, you know, the fact that she's female... I get the point that you're making, but, yeah, it's not... I think she's pretty monstrous about all of this. Joe, by the way, do you want a quick joke, a Christmas joke that you might get in your Christmas cracker about electoral reform?
Go on then.
So, well, so what did Santa say about proportional representation?
I don't know.
I've been making a list and checking it twice, and it turns out that when you actually count all the votes properly, the results look completely different. Well, hey! You don't get that with James O'Brien, do you? All right, cheers, Ollie. Merry Christmas. Simon is in charge. I think we've got a better line now, Simon.
I think so. Hi, Lewis. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well. Your thoughts on this?
Well, as I took my text, I think we need a new dynamic with the royals, I think. Mm. Obviously, we've had Elizabeth. We've now got Charles.
I'm 40, so I feel like they're a few generations above me, you know, maybe a little bit out of touch. We look at William. William has, throughout my lifetime, he seemed in touch with the modern world, with the modern British person. And I just feel like someone like that could step in and give us different, like I say, different dynamic and different view of them. Obviously, William, I think, has been a bit outspoken with regards to Andrew, has publicly sort of stated his dislike of all of this. So again, someone like that who's willing to speak up and be in the public eye in this modern era.
I agree with that. So I think a lot is said about William and, you know, a lot of hopes obviously rest upon him. I think sometimes we had a question on the news agency the other day about it was, you know, do we think that Charles will be the last king? I don't. I find it very unlikely to believe that there isn't a world where William becomes king, William the Fifth. But I do think William the Fifth could be the last king. I still think it's a relatively low chance, but I think it's a not inconsiderable chance, and a lot, I think, genuinely rests, particularly on, in terms of reconnecting the monarchy with younger generations who do not share the deference and affinity with it. And part of that, I assume he understands, I think he needs to understand if he doesn't, that a lot of that is about making this institution more open and more transparent.
And I think William would be the person to do that.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably right. Although, yeah, I mean, look, I think much will rest upon him, and whenever it happens. I mean, Charles is clearly a kind of transitory figure. Do you think it'll survive, the monarchy, Sam?
I think if William comes in and we get a new dynamic and the public have a different opinion, I think, yes, it could be a succession to William thereafter.
All right. Simon in Chard in Somerset, Matt, very grateful. Merry Christmas to you, and I'm glad we managed to get you back on the line. If any of you, by the way, have other Christmas cracker electoral reform gags, please feel free to send them in, and we'll choose the best at the end of them, and maybe we'll get the president of the Electoral Reform Society in to judge. Obviously we won't, but please do send your electoral reform gags that you might find on a Christmas cracker on send them in on via text 84850, and of course you can WhatsApp 03456060973. I've got a feeling they won't give me this slot again, so let's just enjoy it. Not after this Christmas material. We're going to be continuing this conversation about the monarchy, so if you're on the line, I think we'll try and get through a few more of those, because so many of you have wanted to say something about it. We're going to get some updates on some other news stories as well, including the question, do all of 2025 political disasters for this government simply always, inexorably, inevitably lead back to Rachel Reeves? The time is midday.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, President Zelensky has revealed that a draft deal to end the war in Ukraine has been negotiated with the US. Mr. Zelensky says it's currently being reviewed by Russia, with Moscow's response expected today or tomorrow. Peter Dickinson is the editor of the Atlantic Council's Ukraine Alert blog. He's told LBC that a number of issues still haven't been resolved.
The main two issues are the territorial settlement, which comes down to a quite small but very strategically important area in East Ukraine. So that's going to be key. The other big thing is security guarantees.
Campaigners are putting pressure on US officials to speed up the release of the files into the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The latest tranche includes an email which alleges Donald Trump travelled on Epstein's private jet more than previously reported. Senior Democrats say the material so far has been staggered because it reflects badly on the president. Lisa Phillips is one of the survivors of Epstein and says the slow release is extremely frustrating.
The survivors and myself always knew this was going to be a big fight. We knew we were going to get toyed with, just little trickles of information coming out. We can use a lot of that information to connect the dots. Unfortunately, they've done a very harmful job of releasing files.
Donald Trump denies any wrongdoing in relation to Epstein and has previously denied ever traveling on his jet. The US State Department says it'll deny visas to five European citizens. They include Thierry Breton, the former tech regulator at the European Commission. The US Secretary of State Marco Rubio has accused the group of leading efforts to try and pressure social media firms to censor American viewpoints. Mr. Breton describes the decision as a witch hunt. The King has chosen Westminster Abbey as the location for this year's Christmas Day broadcast. Charles will deliver the fourth festive address of his reign and the second outside of a royal residence. And the American cookbook author Martha Stewart has become the latest minority owner of Swansea City. She joins the rapper Snoop Dogg and the Croatian midfielder Luka Modric. The Welsh Football Club are currently 19th in the championship table, 7 points above the relegation zone. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 3 at 98.85. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells for most this Christmas Eve afternoon. Windy across the far south, a high of 6 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
4 beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is, and you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall.
Time is 12:03. Nav has texted with the question that, literally no one else ever has ever asked, which is, Lewis, what voting system will you be using to determine the best electoral reform joke? Nav, it's too meta. It's too meta for Christmas Eve. Here's another one. I asked Santa for a fair, is one you get in a crack, right? I asked Santa for a fair electoral system. He said, you'll get it in first past the post. Boom, 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 boom. That's good, right? Come on, let's have some more of your electoral Christmas cracker jokes. We want them on text 84850. Anyway, we're going to talk about Rachel Reeves now. The ultimate Christmas cracker gag. Do all of 2025's political disasters lead back to Rachel Reeves in one way or the other? Why do I say that? Well, yesterday, of course, we got the news sneaked out just before Christmas, just before Parliament broke up for Christmas, that the government was diluting its plans on inheritance tax for farmers, that we're going to increase the threshold from 1 million to 2.5 million. The climb down follows, of course, months of protest by farmers and concern from some Labour backbenchers, and this is just the latest climb down. And you think back to all of the different sort of things that have happened over the course of the last 12 months or so, whether it is the original sin of winter fuel payments, which caused so many problems for the government, the decision to have two terribly long lead-ins to two different budgets, which created all sorts of political and even potentially economic instability. We saw her decision to say that there would be no need to have any budget like the last one, and she wouldn't be coming back with more tax rises, which was an absolute hostage to fortune, would create a split-screen moment that never needed to have taken place, whether it was her decision to have that bizarre press conference at 8:10 in the morning that felt like an emergency wartime summit or emergency wartime broadcast, basically proposing that they were going to increase and do that manifesto-breaking increase in income tax and national insurance. Never happened, despite the fact she'd done that and led all of her troops up to the top of the hill and led all of her troops and the media back down again. And whether it was her decision in this case to put so much political capital behind something that was never going to raise that much political capital in the first place, but has burned through a load of goodwill in different parliamentary constituencies that are now rural and held by Labour. And on top of that as well, whether we go back to the welfare reform, which was essentially a Treasury idea to save £5 billion without any doing any of the legwork before, again, marching a load of Labour MPs up to the top of the hill and marching them back down again. Again and again and again and again. Who is the same person behind all of these decisions in one form or another? Well, it is the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves. And there are plenty of Labour MPs who are questioning whether she has the political antenna to be in that job. Let's talk now to Audrey Allegretti, Chief Political Correspondent for The Times. Prepare yourself, Audrey. We will be coming to you for your favourite electoral reform Christmas cracker gag. But before we get onto that, Rachel Reeves, this is just another extraordinary climb down, really, that does lead back to her.
It certainly does. And a lot of people are questioning why Labour put themselves through the political pain in the first place of announcing this decision to basically sort of scrap the exemption for inheritance tax on agricultural properties in the budget last year, only to take this incredibly slow, probably can't call it a screeching U-turn because it took, 13 months to get there.
A slow motion car crash U-turn, if such a thing
During
could
which
happen.
Time, obviously, you've had loads of rural Labour MPs incredibly feeling the pressure from their sort of rural constituents. Labour obviously picked up seats in parts of the country they didn't expect to at the last election, and that meant their electoral coalition grew. And suddenly there were lots of Labour MPs pounding on the door of number 11, saying to Rachel Reeves, there are real issues here, you need to fix them. So it does risk looking a bit tin-eared, but largely the public do often welcome U-turns instead of sort of sticking your fingers in your ears and being obstinate.
There is, though, a political cost, isn't there, Aubrey, which is that when a government, particularly a government with a majority the size of this, which, you know, in theory should be resistant to U-turns and resistant to sort of parliamentary rebellion, it does send a signal to your own MPs that if you kick up enough of a stink about something, then basically the government will fold. And obviously there's another one. I noted yesterday, for example, that Carl Turner, the Labour senior backbencher, off the back of this, who has been very much against the government, Ministry of Justice's proposals on limiting the number of jury trials, basically saying, this is going to happen all over again. Do not, Chief Whip, do not march us up to the top of the hill. You don't have the votes. You're going to buckle. So just do it in short order. It sort of sends that signal, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, Rachel Reeves came into office projecting herself as the Iron Chancellor, and certainly I think that image and her grip on the nation's purse strings weakened in the light of several U-turns. I mean, if we're looking back throughout the course of this year, of course, we had Winterfuel at the cost of around £1.5 billion and welfare cuts reversed, another £6 billion, both things which helped create a big hole in the public finances. So the government can't sort of look around and blame others for those difficulties. It created those difficulties itself by reneging on cuts that it had promised to make and then not announcing how they were going to fill that sort of black hole. Rachel Reeves is trying to get away from that in 2026 by delivering what's known as the spring statement. It's not supposed to be this kind of massive change to tax and spend, but she is going to not ask the OBR, the Budget Responsibility Watchdog, to effectively say whether the government is on or off track to meet its fiscal rules. That means she should have relatively sort of 12 months clear instead of this kind of constant speculation about what taxes she's going to have to hike because of the very minimal headroom she left herself.
How do you assess her political position now, Aubrey? I mean, and do you accept the received wisdom, which is that she and Starmer are umbilically linked, that if he were to remove her, that it would be basically it would augur his own destruction? Or because there have been examples before, even though chancellors and prime ministers are often politically close, there have been examples before when prime ministers have removed their chancellor and it's not doomed them.
Absolutely. And I mean, there is a received wisdom in Westminster, as you say, which is that they're sort of joined at the hip. But there is another saying that I really like, which is that something is impossible until it's inevitable.
Yeah.
And that is that basically everything is kind of ruled out. That thing will never happen until the circumstances dictate that it must. And so I think it is largely true that Keir Starmer sees Rachel Reeves as the sort of one of his biggest sort of foot soldiers who, if he goes, much like when Kwasi Kwarteng was sacked by Liz Truss, the knives very soon came out for the person at the top. And certainly their whole project seems, coordinated. But I think we are starting to hear murmurings in the background about people like Ed Miliband, who might be being touted for a possible Labour leader, but I think enough Labour MPs know that it would be politically toxic to put into number 10 somebody who was rejected by the electorate at the 2015 general election. But he still might be deserving of a very senior job, and you could argue that he'd be well placed to take over as Chancellor. Another person whose name we don't actually hear that often is Jonathan Reynolds. He was the Business Secretary, and I think he sort of tells an interesting story if Keir Starmer wants to pivot his narrative about what the government's going to do with a different Chancellor and number 11. And he's been sort of consigned to the Whip's office, a role that he doesn't seem to enjoy that much, and that most Labour MPs and Cabinet Ministers don't quite understand why he's doing it. So I think Rachel Reeves is safe for now, but like I said, it's inevitable until it's impossible. The other way around. It's impossible until it's inevitable.
I noticed one other thing, Aubrey, just one thing finally. I noticed that this question, and I didn't quite expect it, I don't think many people did, to sort of come up so readily at the end of the year, but it's clearly going to be quite a big question within internal Labour Party politics, at least in 2026. This question about the customs union and about our potential membership of it. Wes Streeting obviously giving that interview to The Observer on Sunday, where he signalled pretty strongly, he didn't say explicitly, but he signalled pretty strongly that a customs union that would be a good idea. It's already becoming a sort of point of contention, right, within the Labour family, with the deputy leader of the Labour Party, newish deputy leader Lucy Powell, saying Labour must stick to its manifesto, which is obviously an implicit rebuke to Streeting. This stuff is starting to, which is obviously all being seen also through the prism of a potential leadership contest next year, this stuff is sort of boiling up.
It certainly is, and it's a very, very clever dividing line from Wes Streeting, the health secretary, because if you're sort of looking at the raw numbers of how to win a contest based on both winning ideally a majority or a plurality of Labour MPs and, of course, Labour members, they are both skewed strongly towards the Europhile end of the spectrum. And it's not something that most of the cabinet ministers have been confident about talking about, even though privately they are very strongly supportive of the idea of getting closer to Europe and the EU. And actually, in an ideal world, if they could clip their fingers and hope that there would be no sort of significant political ramifications, would be very much up for either rejoining the EU or the customs market or the customs union or the single market. So it's a really clever way, I think, of West Streeting of currying favour with the right people, i.e. Labour MPs and Labour members, because he knows that it's something that most government ministers won't be brave enough to go out there and say.
So, and just absolutely finally, Aubrey, this is going to be very cruel, but no one will remember what you say, so it doesn't really matter. we can just sort of gloss over it, can't we? It's Christmas Eve. Anybody sensible is doing something more interesting. What do you think will happen with Starmer? Would you think he's going to be subject to actual leadership contest next year? Because ultimately, again, a bit of received wisdom in Westminster is that it's inevitable. I still think it's underpriced, the idea of both Reeves and Starmer being in place this time next year. Not something that is a commonplace for you. What do you think?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, Labour MPs who want a leadership contest to happen and to depose Keir Starmer openly confess that they're not terribly coordinated. One of them described it as like lemmings jumping off a cliff in different directions. And there are still a sort of small number of people that are trying to make it happen very early next year, i.e. in January. One of them said to me the other day, oh, January is the most popular month for divorce lawyers, so, you know, maybe let's rent them up and hope that we can get a divorce in the Labour Party, some sort of torture joke like that. But I think they are still in a drastic minority. But it is worth pointing out that there are, you know, we now know that the magic number is 80. That's the number of people that you need to effectively force a contest if they get behind one single candidate. And every rebellion now is going to be seen through the prism of that 80 number. There was, for example, a letter that I reported on earlier this week to the housing ministry complaining about the lack of progress on abolishing ground rents or capping it. And that attracted 80 signatures. Anything which gets that number will now be, I think, strike sort of fear into the spines of people in the whips office in number 10, because they'll just see it as potentially being used as cover to make a wider political point about the Prime Minister.
Aubrey, I did say I was coming for you on this. Any favourite electoral reform gags?
I hadn't even thought, I didn't even know they existed.
Do you not do all this sort of chat of at the Times?
No, sadly, it's missed the spy.
That's a shame.
All I could think of was let's be avin' it, like AVing it.
Oh, that's all right.
Christmas-y.
That's all right, that's fine. Just... Do you want to hear one from Alex in Leeds? Here's one, we'll leave this one
certainly
with you. Lewis says, question on the, question, why are there no elections where Santa lives? Aubrey?
I don't know, why are there no elections where Santa lives?
Because the North Pole is the only pole that matters. Alex in Leeds.
Terrible. Maybe that was from Alex Soble, the Labour MP in Leeds.
Geek. All right, that's Aubrey Allegretti there, chief political correspondent at the Times. Of course he's a political geek. That's completely, absolutely preferable. More of your Christmas cracker electoral reform jokes, very much welcome via text on 84850. And also, your thoughts on whether, in this new year, the best thing that Keir Starmer could do is sack Rachel Reeves, 0345-6060973. The time is 12:15.
This is LBC.
Thanks for a lovely evening. Would you like to come in for a coffee?
Yeah, okay. That'd be lovely.
Oh, gosh, sorry. I didn't mean... I just wanted you to see my new Wix kitchen. It's just been installed.
At Wix, our experts will support you every step of the way, from a free kitchen design service through to a professional installation. Plus, right now, find big savings in the Wix kitchen sale. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms apply.
When your favourite celebs strut their stuff. When the underdog rises to the occasion. When you can't believe the judges' scores.
That was fantastic.
Wish I could pass a dobe like that.
Well, for starters, you could pass a those bickies.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels, so you can enjoy every twist and turn of your favourite reality show. Search TV licence together.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
New year, new you. Maybe. New year, new car. Definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until 12th of January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
With Lidl Plus, there's no need to stress to impress this Christmas. Get 15% off deluxe chilled party food, like golden prawn toasties with ponzu dip, scrumptious paella bites, and delicious vegetable dim sum. Lidl, more to value. 18 plus GB only, subject to availability. Selected stores, terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV. Ends 31st of the 12th.
Lewis Goodall on LBC. Text 84850.
I don't know about the worst electoral reform joke, but I think we may have a late contender for the worst take of 2025 here from Levi. Lewis Goodall is not as hilarious as he thinks he is. Wrong. Julian is in Finchley. Julian?
Hi, Lewis. Merry Christmas to you.
Merry Christmas to you. I'm fine, thank you. I'm fine. What, something to say about Rachel Reeves or the Republic question?
Well, but a bit of everything.
Oh,
if
go
I can.
On.
I don't
please
have,
do.
I don't have any good jokes for you, I'm afraid.
That's
so
all right.
I'll just crack on.
That's all right. Crack her on.
Just on the monarchy. I mean, I've been wrestling with this for a long time myself about, you know, the pros and cons of it, a republic or not a republic. And there are lots of arguments for and against. You know, if you look at the happiness index of the best countries in the world, you know, they, half of them have monarchies, half of them don't. So
yes,
there's lots of pros and cons to it. But in the end, I think I come down in the favor of a republic, because what does it say to our kids when we say, you know, the most powerful position in the land is designated by birth, not by meritocracy?
Yes.
And I think that's the defining point. We shouldn't be in a society now where the most powerful person, the king, is just in there by birth. So
although I suppose there is a counter argument, which is sometimes put, which I think is fair enough, which is to say, what does it say if you're in the United States and you know, you're looking at the most powerful office in the land and it's Donald Trump and he was selected to be there.
I agree with that. And there's no perfect system either way around.
No,
but at least you can then vote that person out. It's not hereditary.
Yes.
We're not stuck with that for 100 years.
Yes.
And one particular family. So
yes,
that's the advantage there.
Yes.
And I think then this, your previous caller, Ollie, said it very, very well. It's part of a broader package of how do we want the country to be run? And it's not just that, it's the, you know, I think we, one of the big issues is we don't have any sort of inspiring leadership of substance in a party that we can coalesce around. So I think a lot of people feel like I do or he does, but there's nobody we can really get behind to put some of these ideas into practice. And, you know, so that's, there's no, you know, I can't vote for anybody that I think, you know, wants a republic, wants to do X, wants to do Y, wants to put us in a customs union. There's no sensible aspirational party I can look at to get behind. So that's, I think we've got a real void of leadership in our country and someone to, and a party and a person and a team to get behind. And it certainly isn't the Labour Party, but then it isn't any other party either.
Yes.
So that's an issue I think we, you know, how do we resolve that? I don't know, but that's a bigger question that is a big issue.
Do you think it's existential for them, Julian?
I think it is, yeah, 100%. And I think this particular issue now with Andrew Windsor has really sort of brought this to a head, because, you know, he's clearly lied to the country. We know that he's lied to the country. Now we see more evidence coming out. We know he's into this much deeper than he would ever wanted to have admitted. And this is, there isn't any worse crime than we can talk about here, really, than that. So it's not just about the victims of Epstein. What does this say to all child abuse victims around the world? And they're looking at this case and thinking, here is the brother of one of the most powerful people on the planet, and he can get away with that, and he can be protected. And that is not right. We have to speak up for all abused kids around the world and say, no, this is, we will not let this pass. The police are going around investigating hate speech in Croydon, you know, taking people out of schools. Why isn't Andrew Windsor being investigated for lying to the country? He needs to be properly investigated. I don't want to hear the King's speech tomorrow about, you know, the goodness that we might be having in the world. No, if you want to come on TV, let's talk about your brother and his involvement in child abuse. That's what I want to understand.
Well, Julian and Finchley, grateful to you there. Again, I must reaffirm that Andrew continues to deny that the allegations that have been made against him, although, as we've said a few times on this show, the fact that the royal family decided to strip him of all of those titles must mean that the royal family's estimation, he has done at least something wrong, although it's not entirely clear, actually, and this is the extent of the opacity. It's not entirely clear what the royal family think he's done or think that he has done wrong that merits that. other than the fact that it continues to attract a lot of bad publicity, which isn't actually a very good reason for doing it. But it would be great to try and establish that actually they're thinking on it, but it's impossible to do so because they don't subject themselves to any scrutiny about this. It might be because I'm going to Norway later where my wife's from, but the Norwegian example is on my mind because they've also been going through, the Norwegian royal family, with close relations, of course, to our own, has had their own quite significant sex scandal of late with Marius Borg Huiby, with apologies to my mother-in-law for the pronunciation, the 20-year-old, 8-year-old son of the Crown Princess Mette Marit and a stepson of the Crown Prince Haakon, who is the heir to the Norwegian throne. So he's not a royal himself, but he is by marriage, I suppose, in a sense, or the marriage of his mother. He's been charged with four counts of rape, 4 counts of sexual assault, multiple counts of bodily harm and domestic violence, secretly filming women's genitals without consent, 32 total offences including domestic abuse, vandalism and violation of restraining orders, and is facing up to 10 years in Norwegian prison if convicted. And indeed, the alleged rapes occurred in 2018, 23 and 24, the last one after the police investigation had already begun, after being arrested in August 2024 for domestic violence against a girlfriend. So we're talking very, very serious allegations. Very serious allegations indeed. He did grow up in the royal household after his mother married the crown prince. And this has been called the biggest crisis in the Norwegian monarchy since 1905, when the country was independent. I'm talking about this for a reason, not just because it's interesting, but partly because the Norwegian royal family have been accused of similar things, of silence, of not taking it sufficiently seriously, of bankrolling his lifestyle. But there is a crucial difference. There's two crucial differences. It is clear there's been certainly no even perceived cover-up with public money. Unlike Andrew's multi-million pound settlement funded by the sovereign grant in one form or another, there's been no palace cash making this disappear. And there has also been clear institutional distance put between them. And they've allowed the police and been very clear that the police should investigate properly. And the police is investigating properly. And the other monarchies of Europe, which tend to be in the Nordic countries, the Scandinavian countries, their monarchies have way more transparency and public scrutiny in their parliaments. Their budgets and accounts are signed off every single year in those parliaments. There is a culture of scrutiny and openness and transparency. They prove that you can have monarchy, but not have it on the British model. We don't have to have it on the antediluvian, almost medieval model that we have, where we just start simpering about letting the magic die. No, this is an instrument. It's not something that is born to be, actually. It's not something that's essential. We could replace it easily. It's an instrument to make our politics better. And if it doesn't make our politics better, it ought to be reformed or abolished. Layla is in Lewisham. Layla. Morning, Layla. Are you there?
Hiya.
Hello.
I just wanted to make... Yes, I am. Hear me?
Yes, I can. You're loud and clear on the radio. What do you think about this?
I can hear you.
I can. You, and everyone else can hear you as well.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to make a specific point regarding the royal family, and specifically Andrew's appointment as a special envoy. He was appointed in 2001, and I read that there were also articles and quote unquote, as they like to say, anonymous sources from the royal palace who thought that Charles thought that he was inappropriate for the role. And to put this in direct quotes, they thought that he would be a lot more, that he wasn't going to be a good representation of this country, and yes, that he would be more interested in, and this is directly quoted, golf and women. Also, before he got exposed with getting pictured by Epstein in 2010, after Epstein served his prison time, there were also other allegations of him meeting with dictators and the sons of dictators. So
I suppose that was probably part of his. Layla, that was probably part of his job as the trade envoy at the time in Venice. Layla, I think you know what, Layla. I think we've got too much of a delay on that line, so we'll either try and tidy it up. But I think you made some good points about. I mean, that is an interesting, very germane point that he had a trade envoy job for a long time. He was representing not just the royal family but the government, different governments for a long time. What his qualifications were for that job, not entirely clear. I suspect there wasn't an open, transparent job recruitment process, but I could be wrong. Will is in Paisley. Will,
hi there. I hope you have a very Norse Christmas. Very happy. Well,
thank you very much. Thank you. Go Yule. Go Yule, is this over.
Back to the Labour Party.
Yes.
Well, they come in promising change from the last lot, you know, and the first scandal they get bogged down with was freebies and bungs. And the second scandal was avoiding tax. And they've just basically been falling down ever since. What we needed from them is bravery. And we haven't had them. I believe was it Julian, one of your previous callers, was saying about, you know, our political system. We're just political pygmies, a lot of them. We're needing real reform, not the party, but, you know, in our political system. You know, they really need to have a wealth tax. They really need to go, you know, shut down those tax havens for a start. Why do we have tax havens in British territories?
Well, indeed. Do you think
royals to squirrel their money away into? That's why.
Did you vote Labour at the last election?
Well, I did vote Labour in the last election, and it was the first time since before the Iraq War.
Really?
Which was the reason why there was such a big gap, because
Labour
they took us to war.
And Labour did very well in the election in Scotland. It was one of the places they outperformed their position.
They won't do well next time.
Well, they
won't do well next time because they've made too many mistakes. Gaza being one of them.
What moment, therefore, so you vote for them in July 24, what was the moment that you started to, it started to sour for you?
Right at the beginning, when basically they were getting the freebies. You know, it was not on the same scale as the Tories, but they're promising to be different. They're promising change. And here we get the same mud. We get the same, oh, they're getting clothes and clothes for Keir Starmer's wife and new specs and getting tickets to theatres. And then you get the housing minister trying to avoid a tax. I mean, it just sounded at the last lot. And again, there's no bravery there because that's what we're needing. We're needing somebody to actually enact change. The majority of people.
Is there someone within the Labour government, there's obviously a lot of speculation about Starmer's future, is there someone within the Labour government that takes your fancy that could win it back for you?
Jess Phillips, I think, is the one I've got the most respect for. The rest of them, I just think they're pretty much the same as the last lot. They're just political careerists. What can politics do for them, not what politics can do for the rest of us? You know, they're all out for titles and, you know, they're looking at their next job.
And what is it about Jess Phillips in particular that arrests you in that way?
Honesty, a genuine person. You know, finding a genuine person who's honest, who's got a sense of humour in politics. You know, it's like hen's teeth. You can generally tell when somebody's honest because they've got a sense of humour. I just, you know, I respect what she says. She says it, you know.
Do you think Boris Johnson passes that test? The humour test? The honesty humour test?
Boris Johnson couldn't lie straight in bed. You know, I never voted for him. I never would have.
He could tell a joke.
Sorry, he's not a politician. He's doing the Boris Johnson show. He's just playing a role.
All right.
You know, he wasn't a real person.
All right, Will in Paisley there. Any thoughts that you have about, certainly whether Keir Starmer, the best thing that he could do, given that so many political disasters of this government, in one form or another, do seem to go back to Rachel Reeves, 0345 60 60 973. Likewise, if you agree with me that 2026 is an existential year for the royal family and they need to be more open about what they knew about Prince Andrew. Another, we've got a late entry here from Bob in Durham for their electoral reform gags. How did the Speaker announce the winner of the Christmas vote on PR? The mince pies have it, the pies have it. You don't get this with Nick Ferrari, do you? LBC News headlines with Matt Hewitt.
President Zelensky has revealed the details of a draft deal to end the war in Ukraine, which is now being reviewed by Russia. It includes security guarantees from NATO, EU membership and a trade agreement with the US. Campaigners are putting pressure on US officials to speed up the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files. 11,000 documents were released yesterday, past the deadline to publish them. And a former EU tech regulator says US sanctions against him are a witch hunt. Thierry Breton's one of five Europeans to be denied a visa. America claims they coerced social media platforms into suppressing viewpoints they oppose. LBC weather. Dry with sunny spells for most for Christmas Eve afternoon. Windy across the far south. A high of 6 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
He weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at two. We said three. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
Santa's stuck up the chimney. It must be him. He's scrambling around. He's making a din. There's soot on the carpet, stockings on the floor. But wait, a black smudge in the shape of a paw. Santa's not stuck. He doesn't meow. It must be your cat. And she's coming down now. Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prepped for the art and design industry. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Keo, an art and design student in year 12.
As an art student, we get the chance to work on our own pieces, either in the studio or using the digital software. Some of my work has also been shown in galleries. And last week, I got the chance to attend a design agency to learn more about my future career.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
Lewis Goodall on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
Time is 12:34. We just had that ad there for Global Academy. Absolutely cannot recommend it enough if you are of that age and you're looking to get into the media and get into this industry. I work on the news agencies, as you know, is our my sort of bread and butter day to day. We've had a couple of Global Academy apprentices come through. Absolutely key members of the team. Learn so much. We learn a lot from them. Hopefully they learn something from us, not least about electoral reform, Christmas cracker gags. And they get to put up with us. So if you are interested in getting into this industry and are of that age, could not recommend it more. Global Academy, search for it online. A few of your texts here on the Royal Family. I think a good way to start getting rid, Leah says, of the Royal Family would be to start charging inheritance tax on their estate and only funding the King and Queen are next in line. The rest can all get jobs. Exactly. That's the thing. We could do that. Lots of other countries do it. All you need is the Crown Prince, i.e. the heir apparent or princess, and the monarch. The rest of them, it would be far better for them. No wonder they're so listless and they don't know what to do with their lives. They're given all of this prestige for no reason and they don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to deal with it and they don't know what to do. They're listless. There's so many unhappy souls that have comprised the royal family. Whether it's, you know, for very different reasons, I must say, but whether it's Andrew or Princess Margaret or Harry, or you go back all the way back, even Edward VIII and before that, they live such unhappy lives because they just don't know quite what to do. Power, prestige, responsibility, but without any, and authority, but without any real clear direction of what to do with one's own life. It's bizarre. Caroline says, I love the royal family. If they get rid of them, it will be a big mistake and will be regretted. Well, someone suggested earlier that it would inexorably lead to Islamic State, so I suppose it's one up on that. Tom says, Kerry says, listening to your discussion, we monarchy v. republic. Any change will have a rolling effect around the Commonwealth. I'm in Australia. We had a failed attempt to change to a republic, but if you change the structure, Australia will have no choice but to also change. Really interesting point. Again, how this is all being perceived in the wider Commonwealth. Of course, the King remains head of state in, what is it, still 14 countries or so around the world. Hard not to believe that this Andrew stuff and their reaction is not itself generating a reaction. Your thoughts on whether this is showing, let's forget about Andrew for a second, if this crisis is showing that the royal family cannot deal with transparency, and whether you agree with me that it is a scandal, that they haven't been more open about what they knew and when. 0345 6060973. Some other news that's broken today, though. Certainly no respite for, Western Christmas. It won't be Orthodox Christmas there yet, of course. In the Ukraine war, Volodymyr Zelensky has said he was ready to withdraw troops from parts of eastern Ukraine under a peace plan backed by the United States. The Ukrainian president is considering giving up military control of the Donbass to create a demilitarized economic free zone that would act as a buffer with Russian-held territory. Mr. Zelensky has said he would put the plans to a national referendum if Russia also agreed to pull back its forces from the region. The offer the closest is he has come yet to a compromise on ceding territory. However, Ukrainians are highly unlikely, by common consent, to agree to giving up land in a public vote. We're going to speak now to Alexander Kara, former advisor to the Minister of Defence in Ukraine, now director for the Centre of Defence Strategies. Alexander, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Is this a potentially big concession from the president?
Hello, Lewis. First of all, Merry Christmas, and Ukrainian Orthodox Christians are celebrating with the Mother Church, with the Church of Constantinople, not the Moscow. Well, I am highly skeptical that this piece of paper will bring us closer to a ceasefire, let alone the just and lasting peace. There are many points absolutely useless, like these sides are reinsuring Ukraine's sovereignty. Our sovereignty, independence, and territorial integrity were ensured when Ukraine became independent, and the Russians signed an agreement in 1997 with Ukraine. And they violated all this bunch of documents, bilateral and international, starting from the UN Charter. Or the things like that the Russians will install some legal mechanism how not to attack Ukraine again, and State Duma, the Russian parliament, would vote for that. It's laughable. In the Russian criminal code, there is the punishment for those who plan and carried out the aggressive war, which is Russia has been carrying out against Ukraine since 2014. And there are many, many things of that kind. It's very generous for the Americans and Russians to offer Ukraine a membership in the European Union, which are not part of. And think like that. I cannot imagine Ukrainian troops withdrawing from the remaining parts of Donetsk region, which would expose Ukraine and give Russia an ability to attack neighboring regions of Kharkiv and Dnipropetrovsk. So I'm skeptical about this document. I'm a bit disappointed that Ukrainian side agreed on such, sorry to say that, it's idiocy, I would say. And I'm sure that the Russians would reject that because they want to achieve their maximalist goals, not just about Ukraine, but about Europe as well. This war is not just about Ukrainian territory. Let me remind you that in 2021, when there was a first threat of the invasion, the Russians demanded the United States to pack their belongings and get off the European continent. And to the NATO, they asked them to expel the Central and Eastern European countries. So I believe that Russians would reject this shameful document, and shameful because, you know, Ukrainian side agreed on such a language.
Is it possible, therefore, Alexander, is this what we've seen all year, obviously, is this sort of diplomatic dance between Kyiv, Moscow and Washington. And we've seen both Zelensky and Putin attempt to curry favour with Trump and to convince him that the other, i.e. Zelensky or Putin, is responsible for the roadblock to peace, is responsible for the fact that there is no deal, which Trump clearly wants. Is this just another iteration of that, Zelensky going along with a Trump idea that in reality he knows will have no legs?
I hope that he doesn't have any illusions that such a piece of paper or any diplomatic agreement with Russia, short of capitulation of Ukraine, would satisfy Russians. And certainly we've been trying to please Trump and to keep him at least neutral. But in the view of the recent developments, like the U.S. National Security Strategy, which doesn't consider Russia as a threat to the core national interests of the United States, vice versa, this administration believes that Europe, with its liberal democracy, is a threat to the United States. And actually, we've seen some moves, pretty harsh moves, like appointing an envoy to Greenland and actually threatening the territorial integrity of an allying nation of Denmark. And all those attacks on the European Union and in Europe in general, it's mean that this administration is closer ideologically to Russia. And that's why it would be happy to sell out Ukraine for peanuts to Russia with the aim to get to business as usual and solve their own issues, including enriching themselves, I mean, Trump and his circle. So, yes, we've been playing this game, but I don't think that there is a slim chance of peace, because the real situation on the ground, in the whole environment of this conflict, is not... In such a level that Russia is not able to prosecute the war, and that's why is ready to stop it.
Do you think that we have woken up in the West adequately to another theme of this year? You've just alluded to it, Alexander, which is it feels in so many ways as if this new Trump administration, and we saw the new national security document spell so much of this out just the other week, is more aligned culturally and politically in some ways with Russia, with Moscow, than it is with Europe. And yet we still have leaders, our own Keir Starmer or others, still saying, you know, the American alliance, European alliance is as key as it's ever been, etc., etc. It doesn't feel like that most of the time. It feels as if we are truly singing different songs for the first time since the post-war period began.
Yeah, completely right. But I understand your politicians, I mean the British politicians, you are so dependent on the security umbrella of the United States. Even your nuclear deterrence forces and posture depends on the United States. And certainly it's not it wouldn't be a good idea to criticize this administration and try to further undermine this possible security arrangements between the United Kingdom and the United States. But in general, it's a warning sign for all Europeans, to mature and understand that the United States are not a reliable ally anymore, but rather the political threat. Certainly, they're not going to invade the United Kingdom or other countries, but they would gladly undermine the pillars of democracy and this way of life in Europe. They would love to crash the European Union. Like Russians and like Chinese as well, they would love to deal with separate nations vis-a-vis rather than with united, Europe in general. But I understand the European politicians, why they're trying to flatter Trump and to please him and to keep him engaged in Europe. We still have a pretty, we have a hope that some sane forces in the Congress would be trying to cope with Trump and to lessen the damage he's causing to alliance and partners like Ukraine. But let's see in November next year when there will be midterm elections. There might be some changes, and at least House of Representatives would be under the control of Democrats. Whether Democrats would be ready or capable of putting forward a leader that can beat Trump and J.D. Vance, which is actually, we've seen the last week or this week, the events, and it's clear that the MAGA tribe is trying to bet on J.D. Vance, and he might be a president even sooner than the elections in the United States. So, yes, it's a profound change of the geostrategic situation, and Europeans need to do more for themselves and helping helping Ukraine. The results of this war, either ceasefire or the final settlement, and I don't believe we will reach it with Russia, will affect not just Europe, but the whole world, whether there is a remaining of the international law and things like that, or there is a law of force.
Alexander, one final question. This war began in February 2022. It has, when we get to February, it will be entering, of 2026, it will be entering its fifth year. Do you think that by the time we are perhaps sat here on the eve of next Christmas Eve, Ukraine will be at peace, or do you think in your bones it will still be at war with Russia?
Let me correct you. This war started in February 2014.
Indeed it did. I should say, the full-scale invasion. So it's gone even longer. Yeah. But it will. You'll understand I was referring to the specific period that began in February 22 with the full-scale invasion of Ukraine.
That's right. So we've been in at war with Russia for 11 years. And certainly since 2022, it's a full-fledged, and I would say genocidal war. If you have a look at what the Russians did to Mariupol in a bunch of other cities and towns and villages in Ukraine. So I don't believe there is a diplomatic solution to this war unless Russia defeated or is not able to prosecute the war. And that's why we started to target Russian energy infrastructure and go after their tankers that are selling Russian energy to foreign markets and getting currency to fuel this war. So I don't believe that there is a possibility of anything tangible, except for a possible limited ceasefire next year that would relate to the energy infrastructure in Russia and in Ukraine. Because the Russians degraded our energy infrastructure up to 70% of energy generation facilities are in ruins, and certainly we are suffering as well. So I believe the only real thing that may happen after the new year, it's a limited ceasefire. But the Russians would carry on the war. Fortunately for us, they have some troubles in economy, in their domestic political fabric, and it may undermine the support of Mr. Putin, and there is a slim chance that the turbulence in Russia may push Putin to consider some sort of a peace.
Alexander Kara there, former advisor to the Minister of Defense of Ukraine, now director of the Center of Defense Strategies. And Merry Christmas to him, as Alexander was saying there. I wasn't actually aware of this, but in 2023, Ukrainians decided to move the day of which they celebrate Christmas, which is previously Orthodox Christmas, which would take place sometime after the Western Christmas, but it is now being celebrated on 25th of December, alongside, as he said, the Church of Constantinople rather than Moscow. So there we go. Never let it be said you don't learn anything on this show. We're going to continue this conversation about what is might happen yet with the royal family and whether it is absolutely proof positive that the way they've handled the Andrew affair, the Andrew imbroglio, shows that they must change to survive. 0345 6060 973. Listening to Lewis Goodall on this Christmas Eve on LBC. The time is 12:48.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Ian Dale.
At 3, how do other countries do Christmas food? At 2, which party leaders best capture the spirit of Christmas? But first, after yet another U-turn by Keir Starmer, what do you make of a government that apparently believes in nothing?
Ian Dale, at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
When your favourite celebs strut their stuff. When the underdog rises to the occasion. When you can't believe the judges' scores.
Wow, that was fantastic.
Wish I could pass a dough like that.
Well, for starters, you could pass a dough's bickies.
Nothing brings us together like great TV. And a TV licence covers you to watch all TV channels. So you can enjoy every twist and turn of your favourite reality show. Search TV licence together.
You weren't supposed to burn the potatoes or invite everyone round at 2. We said 3. You weren't supposed to fall asleep on the sofa or ask me to marry you. And you weren't supposed to be here. But you are, thanks to the best gift you ever got. And mine is still having you.
When you donate to the British Heart Foundation, you give a gift that keeps on living. Search BHF today and help us fund life-saving research.
New year, new you, maybe. New year, new car, definitely. Upgrade your year with a new Vauxhall Frontera Electric or any car from our award-winning range. With 0% APR over 4 years with a minimum 20% deposit and £1,000 off on top of all other offers. That's a resolution worth sticking to. Search Vauxhall today. £1,000 saving on new car orders until January 2026. Personal contract purchase, 20% deposit, 18 plus. Subject to status and availability. T's and C's, Stellantis Financial Services.
Protect your pets over this festive period. Visit petsinapickle.co.uk and enjoy Christmas covered.
Find me somebody to love.
There's a whole lot to love in the Dream Sale. Don't you agree, Beds?
Oh, yeah.
There's up to 40% off a range of beds and mattresses. Plus, right now, save 25% on all bed frames, even those already on sale. Shop online now and in-store Boxing Day. Dreams. Love your bed.
Leading Britain's conversation with Lewis Goodall. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Time is 12:51. Rob is in Durham, who I think has something to tell the royal family. Rob, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Lewis. It's a pleasure to talk to the ubiquitous Mr. Goodall.
Well, you know what? That's one of the nicest things they call me.
What I wanted to say is, I'm a Republican, and before
not
the Queen
in the American
died,
sense, I imagine.
No, absolutely not. No. Before the Queen died, any talk of slimming down the monarchy or any sort of reform was always said to be inappropriate. And then when she did die, Charles was in like a rat up a drain pipe. You know, he was banged in an instant. And there was no talk about any slimming down. And yesterday, I mean, frankly, these last 2 days have just been making my blood boil.
In what way?
Just about the monarchy and all this deference and stuff. And you mentioned that despite losing all his titles, Andrew technically was still in line.
Yeah, he's still eighth in line, yeah.
But it would require a major freak accident. And I think maybe the only way this country will ever reform the monarchy is if we had that freak accident and we had a King Mountbatten Windsor, because there would be such an uproar, they would have to change things.
Parliament would legislate to remove him. But I mean, you know, I mean, he would still technically, in the event of that freak accident, you know, he would still be king for a brief period. I mean, he would. Yeah. There's no other mechanism. You know, like, I mean, I just think, I still think it's amazing. And I think Parliament, it shows how supine Parliament is, that I know they talk about, oh, we don't want to waste legislative time. Half the time, Parliament rises so early these days, they're not that pressed in Parliament, in the Commons, most of the time. And they wouldn't presume that. I can't imagine it would be a very technically difficult bill to draft, which is simply to say that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is removed from the line of succession. Nor would it be especially controversial, I imagine, neither the House of Commons or the House of Lords. And I tell you what, if it is controversial, if any MP or Lord wants to come out and say, no, this shouldn't happen, well, let them come out and defend that idea. But I can't imagine it would be that complicated or time-consuming for Parliament. And yet there is apparently no clamour for it, because for some reason, ministers, and I ask about this on a couple of Sundays in a row, and I say, well, don't you think you should legislate for it? This is a matter for the royal family. No, it's not. It's a matter for the government, and it's a matter for Parliament.
Well, I think as well, you've talked about the royal family finding out the truth about what Andrew was up to. It's a very easy thing to do. Just ask the royal protection officers. No. They were there with him in Pizza Express, in Maxwell's London Mews, and in Epstein's New York and Florida mansions. It's clearly easy to find out what was going on, and I'm sure they know what was going on.
Well, indeed, but what's amazing, Rob, is that basically it's an institution which seems to be immune from that sort of just basic level of scrutiny. Rob in Durham, grateful to you and Merry Christmas. Keith is in Langley Mill. Keith, where is Langley Mill? I mean, I don't know where that is. Where is that?
It's in between Derby and Nottingham. Ah, happy Christmas to all the mining town.
Oh, lovely. Well, Merry Christmas to you in the East Midlands as well. Keith, what have you got to say about this?
Well, I personally think that the monarchy should be abolished.
Go on.
And I am 68 years of age, and that's important because when I was a young man, the monarchy was the be-all and end-all, and I ended up joining the British Army and taking the Queen's shilling.
Yes.
After some substantial service, I came out to a country that was in a little bit of upset. And, of course, we've had Diana involved in an accident in a tunnel in Paris. And we don't really know what happened. And for me, at my age, that started to flag the royal protection that exists between the police and the government, and subsequent events have occurred, and now we're in a situation where, without any doubt, Andrew has been taking the Michael out of the population of our country.
I think that, Keith, that it's interesting, as you say, as a sort of person who's sort of been on that journey. I mean, do you think that this is sort of existential for them?
personally, I think that they have a wake-up call to determine their longevity, and I don't think they're up to it.
You don't think they're up to it in terms of the reform of themselves?
No, I don't think that. I don't think they even have the foggiest idea how Dowdy can do it.
But Keith, the thing is that. Maybe, but also, I think in order to reform themselves and have that political will, you've got to have that political pressure. And again, I keep coming back to this point.
Exactly.
I keep coming back to this point. Where is that political pressure coming from? Because it ain't coming from Parliament, and it ain't coming from the media.
No, but currently it's coming from Lewis Goodall, hence my text message. Please keep digging and be instrumental in bringing down the monarchy. Wow. Because we need voices like yours to collaborate to start something that cannot be ignored by the political elite.
Lewis Guy Goodall, they call me. Keith, Merry Christmas to you and all those in Langley Mill. Sally is in the other part of the country, is in New Forest. Afternoon, Sally.
Hello, Lewis. Well, I basically think if they want to live up on this fairy castle with this sort of anonymity, that they're going to have to live up to it, and they're not living up to it, and we're living in a halfway house where perhaps King Charles is starting to modernise, but he hasn't gone far enough for me.
Yeah, I keep hearing this thing about him being a big moderniser. I mean, I must say, I'm not a sort of officious kind of royal watcher, but I can't see that many signs of it unless I've missed something.
Well, he has promised us he's going to go that route. I don't know if he does deserve any accolade for perhaps doing this to Andrew, because he has started the process, hasn't he? But I just feel that
it's hard to imagine, I think, the late Queen stripping him of his titles.
Yeah, well, quite. Well, the other thing that hasn't really happened for me, and I was a big... Well, I'm not a royal fan, but I don't hate them, is that no one's really criticised the Queen enough for paying her off, I didn't think. I mean, I thought that would happen after she passed, and it hasn't happened.
I agree. I think it remains an absolutely extraordinary.
But do you not think they have to live up to their fairy castle if they want it?
I do.
This is way outside the fairy castle.
I mean, indeed so. And I've that's basically what these last 3 hours have been about. And maybe some people think I've sort of been hammering that point too much, but I do think it is absolutely astounding that we're in a situation in this country where we've got had all that money being paid out, and we have all these diffuse statements from the royal family where basically they've taken from his titles. They basically say the King and Queen stand with victims of abuse around the world, but we don't actually know what he thinks or what they think he has done that's so bad, because they don't clarify it, because they never answer any questions about it.
Clarify that, they open a huge can of worms. I suppose that they're trying to defend their place as being the fairy castle, but I think they need to clarify that further. I mean, I have a lot of people I know who love the royal family, and therefore I find it hard to say destroy it. But I would say my politics are socialist, liberal, democrat, if you can be. I don't see they're living up to anything right now. But if we had to have a king right now, out of all of them, I'm not really unhappy with him, but I'd like to see him go a lot further. And I'd like to see that there be no succession to the throne for Andrew.
All right, Sally, New Forest, you have the last word there on that subject. And indeed, this show, pleasure as always to sit in for James. I'm off until the new year. If you like the show, remember to join me on Sundays with Lewis Goodall from 10 till 12 for the best political interviews and analysis. And indeed, hopefully, a few jokes along the way as well. Maybe not as many of the sort of Christmas cracker electoral form gags we've been doing, but, you know, something. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back for free on our free Global Player app or on the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinion, put your news categories in the order you want, pause, rewind live radio. You can listen to a range of podcasts, including the very obscure News Agents and Coining It with Lewis Goodall. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Thanks so much for your company today, and indeed on Sundays throughout the year. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Henry Riley in for Tom Swarbrick, but now standing in for Shula Fogarty is the ultimate Christmas cracker of Ian Dale.
Thanks, Lewis. Happy Christmas, and God save the King.
Absolutely.
Now, in the words of Meatloaf, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. On today's show, we'll have 2 hours of Christmas cheer, but first, forgive me if we have a bit of a political discussion. As you know, yesterday the government announced yet another fairly major U-turn, one which I wholeheartedly welcome, on the so-called farmer's death tax. tax. But it's the latest in a raft of U-turns which Labour almost seem to take pride in. We've listened, they say. But doesn't it indicate a government which has no clue what it stands for or where it's going? At two, we'll play you the three Christmas messages from Keir Starmer, Kenny Badenoch and Ed Davey. Nigel Farage hasn't released one. And ask which leader best captures the spirit of Christmas. And at three, Christmas food.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, Ukraine and the United States have negotiated a revised deal to end the war with Russia. President Zelensky's called it a considerable evolution of the last one, which was unacceptable to Kyiv and its allies. There are still unresolved issues on territory, but officials in Moscow are said to already be reviewing the proposals. Alexander Kara is a former advisor to Ukraine's defense minister.
I am highly skeptical that this piece of paper will bring us closer to a ceasefire, let alone the just and lasting peace. There are many points absolutely useless. The Russians will install some legal mechanism how not to attack Ukraine again. It's laughable.
This comes after an explosion in Moscow, which has killed three people, including two police officers. Campaigners are putting pressure on US officials to speed up the release of the Jeffrey Epstein files. Yesterday's latest tranche revealed the disgraced financier was afraid of returning to his cell after an initial attempt at suicide. A former EU tech regulator says US sanctions against him are a witch hunt. Thierry Breton's one of five Europeans to be denied a visa. America's State Department claims they coerced social media platforms into suppressing viewpoints they oppose. A 13-year-old British boy stabbed to death in Portugal has been named locally as Alfie Hallett. The police think he was attacked by his mother's former partner in the city of Tomar. She was found with signs of having been restrained and assaulted. A cold health alert has been issued for Christmas Day. The UK Health Security Agency says from tomorrow evening there's a greater risk of life to life of vulnerable people in southwest England. But forecasters say a white Christmas is highly unlikely. And several of the party leaders have released their Christmas messages. In his, the Prime Minister's promise to help people struggling with the cost of living. The Lib Dem leader, Sir Ed Davey, highlighted resilience and international friendship. And Kemi Badenoch reflected on her year leading the Conservatives.
I want to say a big thank you to everyone who has supported me during my first year as Leader of the Opposition. It's been the biggest challenge of my life, but it's also been a wonderful year.
For the Greens, Zach Polanski is calling for a more compassionate migration system. In the city, the FTSE 100 has closed down 18 points at 98.71. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.15. LBC weather, dry with sunny spells across the UK, windy in the far south, and highs of 3 to 9 Celsius. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Matt Hewitt.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Ian Dale.
Hello, a very good afternoon to you. It's 4 minutes past one on LBC. It's Ian Dale here with you for the next 3 hours. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, Christmas only really starts on Christmas Eve. I know a lot of people put their decorations up sometime in November. I think that's just wrong. We put our tree up last night. I say we. It was up when I got home last night. And I never really start to feel Christmassy until Christmas Eve. And we're going to spend a couple of hours of today's programme talking about some Christmas-related issues, but not in the first hour, I'm afraid to say, because I do want to look at a political subject in the first hour. You've just heard Lewis Goodall talking about all sorts of things to do with the royal family and obviously the Epstein files. I'm not going to talk about that, but I do want to talk about this latest government U-turn on the farmers' inheritance tax, the farmers' death tax, whatever you want to call it. Because I don't know about you, but I wasn't expecting it. I really wasn't expecting it. I think it's been welcomed by many people, both in the Labour Party and the Conservative Party. I think many people would just like to see it abolished and go back to what it was before. But instead of farmers and businesses having to pay inheritance tax over £1 million, they've increased it to £2.5 million. Now, I think that is welcome, because I know from my own family, my own friends who are in the farming sector, just exactly what this meant to them. You will have, some of you will have witnessed the protests of all the tractors coming into central London over the past few months to protest against this. And it just seemed to be an almost wicked thing to do, to penalise a rural community and seemingly have no understanding of the implications of it. Well, they have acknowledged now that it, at least halfway acknowledged that it was the wrong thing to do. And as we know, there have been several farmers, I don't know how many, but into double figures, who have actually taken their own lives rather than risk their family farm having to be sold. Now, that is a terrible state of affairs, and the PM addressed this. The liaison committee will play you that clip in a few minutes. So I want to, A, find out what you think of this latest U-turn, but also ask a wider question, because this is not the only U-turn. Now, sometimes U-turns are forced on governments just by events. But when you look at the number of U-turns there have been, and Stephen Swinford of the Times political editor, he has drawn up a list of U-turns. Bearing in mind the government's only been in power for less than 18 months, it's quite a list. I mean, let me go through them here. We've got the inheritance tax on farmers, the two-child benefit cap, income tax, welfare reforms, statutory inquiry into grooming gangs, winter fuel payments, national insurance, WASPI women, the £28 billion green investment pledge. I mean, all fairly major U-turns, those. Remember that famous speech that Margaret Thatcher gave in 1980? U-turn if you want to, the lady's not for turning. Now, she did do a few U-turns in her time, it has to be said. It wasn't consistency all the way through the Thatcher years. But to have done so many U-turns in such a short time, what does that tell you about this government? Well, I'll tell you what it tells me. I mean, they will say, well, look, this just proves that we're a listening government. We've heard people's concerns, and therefore we've tweaked, we've altered, we've gone back on some of the policies. Yeah, up to a point, Lord Copper. I mean, that's all very well, isn't it? And maybe in one or two of those, you could make that argument. But when you have so many of them, doesn't it indicate to you that we have a government that doesn't believe in anything, that is devoid of a sense of direction? And where does that lead us over the next 3 years? Because surely by the time the next election comes, people are going to want to know what kind of direction their government intends to go in the next parliament, let alone this one. Well, just this morning, Victoria Atkins, she's the Shadow Environment and Rural Affairs spokeswoman for the Conservatives. She's in the Shadow Cabinet. She spoke with our colleagues on LBC News about the impact that so many have felt from the plans to tax inherited agricultural assets and the government's response or lack of it to this.
We know that as a result, direct result of this tax, business investment has plummeted, business confidence has plummeted, and this government has overseen record farm closures. But it's also had an enormous personal cost as well for many families up and down the country. And, you know, whenever I've met farmers, the conversation almost immediately goes to the family farm tax and the conversations that they were having to have around their kitchen tables. And we tried, you know, we Conservatives led the fight on this in Parliament, and I first